I'm so hyped right now. Anything's possible. Anything's possible!
RSG, Renegade Radio. Where real guys talk real sports. Allow me to introduce the illustrious three-man booth.
I want winners.
What's your name, boy?
Mark the Game Changer.
What's your name, boy?
D-Well.
Now, ladies and gentlemen.
T.O.T. Sports Ph.D.
The world famous.
Ray.
They are who we thought they were.
We need more dollars.
RSG. Renegade Radio. The plug is about to open.
Everybody has an opinion.
A man must have a code.
You're taking RSG to the next level.
Hello? You play to win the game.
You could gripe about Mike's game, but I don't see shooting percentage being it.
I mean, I'm not griping the third overall player on my list.
In the face!
Now, I blame it on Nintendo. It's provocative. Excuse me, we don't make excuses. You know, we're not going to make any excuses.
You need to be more like a doll. We don't need a bunch of cats in here. Yeah, looking in the mirror. Do I look good? I got my extra bands on. I got my other shoes. Oh, be a dog. Can't wait. Can you dig it, sucker?
Welcome. You are now in tune to the resistance. RSG, Renegade Radio. Where real guys talk real sports. I am one third of the illustrious three-man booth. Mark is the game changer. Allow me to introduce the rest of the crew. I got my man, D. Wills. Holler at the people.
Well, you know, I had my little dose of Linsanity last week. I'm working on my crossover. I'm trying to back him down, follow him in the paint. Wave to the garden crowd. I'm excited tonight. We got a lot going on.
Yes, sir. You got to work on that extended dribble in that D'Antoni system.
That's it. Trying to
you
got to
have that extended
hold on.
Dribble. I got my man, Phil T. Sports, PhD. Give him the Arvidas ways.
What's happening, real sports guys nation? I just got one thing to say. Hashtag, good luck with the Hall of Fame, period.
We're going to get into that for sure tonight because that was a shot. You know, that was a shot to somebody you consider your boy. And you know that's a sore spot for C-Double. We're going to get into that, though, amongst other things. Again, you're listening to the Real Sports Guys, or Real Guys Talk Real Sports, RSG, Renegade Radio. As you know, it's provocative. It gets the people going. We have an excellent show lined up for you all tonight. We're going to be with you for the next 2 hours, holding you down till 10:30 Central Time. That's 11:30 Eastern Time. So hang in there. I'm going to give you a quick rundown of what we've got going on for you tonight. We'll get into our funky editorial like we always do. We have a special guest, Dr. Eric Mays, will be joining us this evening. And then we're going to get into each of us has come up with a list of the top 20 hip-hop songs of all time. So we're going to give you numbers 20 through 16 of our top 20 hip-hop songs, which I guarantee will be a controversial conversation. So be sure you catch that. And then we're going to get into our five on the black-hand side. We're going to talk NBA All-Star Weekend, which is coming up this weekend. You know, we're going to go off the dome for a little bit. Then we're going to get into the Resistance Digital, Dog of the Week. That's where we give you our performer of the week, or somebody just had some good fortune. And then after that, we're going to close out the show. And then we're going to get into after hours. So if you're a downloader, make sure you stay tuned for the after hours section of the show. Live listeners, we'll be leaving you at that point, but we'll be continuing for another good half hour or so with some interesting conversations. We're going to talk about the Carter Four, Lil Wayne's last album. We're gonna give you the first edition of Things My Wife Said. We're going to talk about Whitney Houston and Basketball Wives coming back and a bunch of other things. The after hours is kind of gloves off. We just kind of get into a lot of things and kind of cover all of the bases that exist in between sports, society, culture, politics, education, all those things. We kind of cover all the bases. So, again, you are listening to the Real Sports Guys or Real Guys Talk. Real Sports, RSG, Renegade Radio. If you want to get on with the Real Sports Guy at any time, feel free to call in. All right, feel free to call in at 1-347-989-0844. Now, we always start our show off, you know, it's like Hubie Brown is coaching. Hubie's philosophy is you always start off the game by dumping it into your big man. And that's what we're going to do. We're going to hit you with what we call the funky editorial, which is where we editorialize something that's going on in the sports world. We kind of dig into it and really have some fun talking about it, barbershop style. So here we go.
Fellas, only one thing we need to say. Shall we say it, y'all? Melvin,
right.
Jimmy, Coleman, Ryan,
say
it. Everybody want to get funky one more time.
All right. So for this week's edition of the Funky Editorial, we are going to talk about the mercurial rise of the one, Jeremy Lin, Harvard grad, undrafted, free agent, now starting point guard for the New York Knickerbockers, averaging 20-plus points a game, 8-plus assists a night, shooting excellent percentages from the field, and has really sparked what was a disappointing and underachieving New York Knicks team, got them in playoff contention without their main pieces, Carmelo Anthony and Amari Stoudemire, playing. He has the phenomenon, the hype machine, has blown a gasket pumping this kid up. There are a lot of factors at play. The story has kind of taken a life of its own. The only thing I can think of in my lifetime, well, not in my lifetime, I'll say recently to rival, is the Tebow phenomenon where, you know, you have somebody who you don't expect a lot from, and I won't even say producing a lot, but winning games. And you have the same effect with Jeremy Lin. He's winning games, and he's winning games on the biggest stage in the National Basketball Association. During the regular season, which is the Garden, which is MSG, the New York Knicks. So
wow, winning.
Yes, sir. We're going to rotate it around real quick. We're going to let it rotate, and we all going to take a crack at what is the deal? What do we make of? What does RSG, what does Renegade Radio think of the Jeremy Lin hype, his game, the phenomenon, can he sustain it, and everything else going on with the New York Knicks situation right now? So I'm going to pass it. I'm going to throw the lob to my man D. Wills. I want you to grab it at the top of the box and slam it home, man. Go ahead and
run. It's like I don't even know where to start with this story. I'm excited. Well, I think it's a great, you know, first of all, this has been the NBA season has been crazy. It's brought a lot of energy. It's come back with a bang. Over here, but I think Jeremy Lin was icing the cake. And where I think he's a little bit different than the Tebow is that his performance has created the hype in a way that he, statistically he's performed well. Whereas Tebow was winning, but the numbers and what people saw weren't matching that. Whereas Jeremy Lin has not only been bringing the hype, but statistically he's been doing things that have never been done in NBA history. But I think what's been good about it is, I think where he might be, where they share, he and Tebow share, is that I think they both have been trying to be, they both have been, were humbled through the process. That's what I like a lot about his composure, that he's never gotten too high or too low with the hype. That when he got torched last night for 38 and he got done in like a young point guard would get done when you go up against somebody like Darren, he took that as a lesson and kept going. And a lot of this, what's been interesting to me is that, you know, this is a cat that hit big time points on folks in college. And so he had glimpses of ability, but between his coming out of the Ivy League and also if you think about how even race may play a role in how he was evaluated, you know, it's kind of like, you know, the person who is white who plays corner, and how people might evaluate him as a corner or as we have historically as a black quarterback. But this point guard who brings something different, how might that have affected his evaluation coming in? But, you know, D'Antoni's been saved. I mean, that's the biggest part of this story, that D'Antoni was dead man walking. Yep. He was dead man walking. I mean, you couldn't have written the script anyway. I mean, he was basically on his way out of MSG, and he is the happiest man on board. And, you know, all this talk about, you know, how other players are going to play with him and things like that. I think there's some things there, but good players figure out how to play with other good players. I mean, I've been convinced by that basketball. You know, if you really want to win, you figure out how to adjust. But I think this is a great story about what is possible, you know, in America, what is possible in sports. It's a microcosm of all the things that we debate in society. It's pulled a lot of different issues. It's got some people fired on ESPN. It's got a lot of stuff. It's got, this story has everything. So that's all I can say. Now, I could talk about this forever, but I'm going to pass it back to you, Game Changer, and let you take it.
All right. And I agree with a lot of the points you made. You know, I was having a conversation with one of my brothers about this particular, about this whole phenomenon that is Jeremy Lin. And, you know, if I had to rank what has made this story a phenomenon, I would say first, I'm going to lay this out and then I'm going to pass it off to PhD and see what he thinks. But first, I would rank the fact that he plays in New York first. That, to me, makes this story big.
Mm-hmm.
Two is the production. Because I think if he was producing as well as he's producing in Milwaukee, Sacramento, in Denver, I don't know if it's as big of a story as it is, given that he's doing this at MSG on a nightly basis. And then the third thing I think we can't ignore, because this is the U.S., this is the United States of America, is his race. And I think that plays a huge part both in the profitability of his story and then also the novelty of his story and his accomplishments. And also the trailblazing aspect of what he's doing. So that's where I would rank. To me, those are the three most important factors in taking the Jeremy Lin story from something that is a run-of-the-mill, guy-out-of-nowhere NBA story to something that has exceeded all expectation as far as the magnitude and the reach of the story, not only on a national level but on a global scale. With that said, I'm going to pass it off to my man, PhD, and I'm going to let him kind of speak on his assessment of the whole hype machine behind Jeremy Lin. And then I got some questions I want to throw out to the three-man booth, and I need to get some answers. So I come to
yeah.
you guys
Uh-oh.
To know y'all can be – y'all the answer guys around this
Uh-oh.
Whole situation.
Yeah.
So I'm going to
yeah.
pass it to my man, PhD, on Backdoor Cut.
Well, I've been enjoying this whole thing, phenomenon, whatever name we want to put to it. I've been sitting on the couch, on a treadmill, whatever it is, watching and enjoying it. Because, like you mentioned, Game Changer, there aren't many things that we can compare this phenomenon to. You know, T-ball, similarities, differences, but certainly had the same wide-ranging appeal I think it's been impressive in what he's done in the first 8 or 9 games he's been in the starting lineup. You know, yeah, the turnovers have been high, but as Coach Hubie Brown said, this guy just needs more reps. And I think we're starting to see that. His last couple of games, the turnovers have decreased some. He's making better decisions with the basketball. I think he has the ability to be a starting guard in this league for the long run. What I'm a little bit concerned with is defensively. He seems to be somewhat of a liability right now, but hopefully that'll come better. Like that'll improve as well when he gets more reps. But right now, you know, he kind of reminds me of a Ginobili when he puts the ball on the deck and drives to the hole. He reminds me of a Ginobili. And his jump shot is consistent enough for him to be very dangerous in this D'Antoni system. I think that this team has the ability to get better and better over the course of the season. And if they slide into a 5th or 6th seed, they can be pretty dangerous in the East. As long as they get out of that 7 and 8 seed, I think they can be pretty dangerous come playoff time.
That's an interesting statement. Now, I still need to see how. You know, I'm on the outside looking in as far as the Melo bandwagon, and I need to see how all this works out, and how D'Antoni makes it work. I think D'Antoni is safe for the time being, but I think that when all the pieces come together, because the team is shaping up to be a pretty formidable team, I agree. When you add in J.R. Smith and Baron Davis, and then with Carmelo coming back, and now you have a legitimate point guard in Jeremy Lin, plus you have Landry Fields starting to hit his stride, Tyson Chandler's having a great year. They're getting exactly what they expected out of him, double-doubles on a nightly basis, and a guy who will protect the rim. Amare still has to get his game going. If they can get all the pieces humming together, I agree. I think it's a formidable opponent in the playoffs, and I don't think it's a team that anybody would want to face as an 8, 7, or 6 seed. Any of the top 3 teams in the East would want to face the Knicks in the first round if all of those pieces are going well. But, and there's always a but, I think it's easier said than done. Like, those words came out of my mouth real nice and smooth, but getting those boys to play together, I think it's going to be a huge challenge for the Pringles man, which is D'Antoni. Doesn't he look like the Pringles guy? You never thought of that, did you? Coach Pringles going to have to figure out how to make all that mesh and how to make all that work, because Carmelo can be a ball stopper at times, and his system is predicated on motion. And when he gets guys to buy into that, it works well. They can produce wins. He's got a system that is proven to win. Now, the questions I have for you fellas, all right? Because, you know, over the last 2 weeks, this hype machine, it's been such a wild ride that it has gone. And the conversation around Jeremy Lin and everything that's happened and why is he getting so much attention has gone in several different directions. One thing I want to say is I like to give a quick middle finger to ESPN, all right? Because I feel like they've taken this story. It's a great story. It's a very profound story. It's a trailblazing story. But at the same time, I feel like ESPN has run it into the ground to a point where I feel I'm getting that Tebow-ish feeling from it, where it's like I got tired of listening to Tebow, and I'm getting tired of hearing about Jeremy Lin. And I texted you guys, like, maybe last Friday or Thursday, like, so this is about a week ago. I was like, okay, enough already, all right? And the reason I got to that point is because it was much ado. It was a lot of sound and fury signifying nothing, in my opinion. There was a lot of hype, a lot of things being said. But at the end of the day, and this is the question I want to ask you guys, where would you place Jeremy Lin amongst the league's young up-and-coming PGs and guys like Curry, Rubio, John Wall, Kyrie Evans, Kyrie Irving, guys like that? Where are you placing Jeremy Lin in the pecking order of the league's young rising stars at the point guard position?
Wow. You know, Kyrie Irving still has just a ridiculous upside. Rubio has impressed me much more than I thought he would in terms of his adjustment to the game. Tyreke Evans, I like him. I kind of wonder a little bit about – I watch him play, and I don't know if he has that dog meter sometimes. Like, I'm always look like I'm only getting three-quarters of the tank, and this guy could dominate at a much higher level. So I always feel like I'm not getting everything from him. John Wall is John Wall hasn't figured out how to pull the whole game together in a way that makes his teammates better. You know, he still it takes a lot of ill-advised shots. He can get to places that he on the floor, but he just doesn't get there like I think he should. I love Steph Curry. So if I was thinking about where I would put Lin on there, I would say, I mean, the guy that excites me the most is Kyrie. I think, you know, if I'm making that list, we're talking about them right now. I like Kyrie right at the top right now. I like Rubio. I'm still, and I like where he's coming. I think he has a lot of upside. I'm not sure if I put him two or three, but I put him right in that space. Curry, you and I have debated about that. I think Curry is still, I think I like, when I watch him, I still feel like he's still learning how to play point guard. And then I just think I don't get enough out of Evans. So I might put Lin in terms of the different things he can offer and he's already shown, maybe a little bit above Evans. Because I think he's maximizing and he's early. I think he still is going to grow. So, I mean, just kind of thinking that off the top of the dome, that's kind of how I would look at it in terms of the ranking. But I think Lin, I think what you're saying, sometimes the ESPN hype clouds a lot of what you can really do. But if you just step back and say, okay, this is a young point guard. How can he grow? Where's his upside? Things like that. I know he needs to go defensively, but I think he has a lot of understanding about the game. He has a lot. He has some of that old man wisdom in his game that I like, that can get you going when you're on the court, can make things happen that I like. He has some of that little savviness that I like, that I see in somebody like even Kyrie Irving. That's what I like. I mean, Kyrie has a full package, I think, right now, has a big ceiling. So that's kind of where I would put Lin in the mix. If I were ranking just off the top of the dome.
Okay. PhD, what say you? Ah, he's in the back room. He's screening calls. You know, I would put Jeremy Lin. You know, I definitely say Kyrie. I think Steph Curry still has a ton of upside. I think he just needs to get in a different situation and get away from Monte Ellis. You know, thinking about Rubio, I would take Rubio over Jeremy Lin. I would probably put John Wall at the top of this list of guys. I just think right now John Wall is in a horrible situation. He's playing with guys who don't know how to play basketball, and there's just too many of them. You know, it's one thing to try and turn around a bunch of guys and get guys to go in the right direction. But when you got this many knuckleheads and low basketball IQ players as the Washington Wizards have, it's just a bad situation. And I think right now it's reflecting poorly upon John Wall. But I think that's just a culture of horribleness in Washington right now. But I still think John Wall has the most talent of any of these guys that we've named. I think I'd still put Tyreke Evans ahead of Jeremy Lin as well. So if I'm ranking these guys, Jeremy Lin might be at the back end of my list, and he may be competing with Ty Lawson for that last spot on this particular list. And the reason I say that is because haven't we seen this story before? You know, point guard goes into D'Antoni's system and plays out of his mind. Exhibit A, Steve Nash. 8 years in the league, he was a good, solid point guard. In D'Antoni's system, he's a game changer. He's a game changer. Last year, Raymond Felton, spent a half a season in Dan Toney's system, best numbers ever in his career. Borderline all-star first half of last season. He gets traded, we get the old Ray Felton back. So, again, yes, he's only 23. What do I think his ceiling is? I think I think eventually, if D'Antoni stays on board in New York and he stays in that system, because I think that's a very underlooked and under-talked about part of his success, is that system. I think if he stays in that system, he has a tremendous opportunity to be kind of that next level right underneath that kind of top-tier point guards in the league. He could live in that next level for, you know, the next 8 to 10 years, depending upon what's around him in New York. If D'Antoni's still there and he still has the pieces that he has around him, he could live in that kind of second tier point guard group, and that six to ten, six to twelve, he could find himself anywhere in that range in any given season. You know, and that's gonna fluctuate from time to time. Maybe towards the back end of it 1 year, towards the front end of it another year. But I don't see him cracking that elite build your franchise around this guy point guards here when you're talking about the CP3s, your Darren Williams, your Derrick Roses. I don't see him cracking that level. I see him kind of living in that Tony Parker under the radar good kind of realm, which isn't a bad place to be. But I just felt like the hype was making him out to be an all-time. Like, they were talking about how he's in the class, you know, after his first six starts, he's in the class with, you know, Jordan and all these other people. I'm like, is that really where y'all trying to put him, or are y'all just saying that to make me believe that this is a bigger story than it is? That's why I gave the middle finger to ESPN. I feel like they've been throwing stats at people trying to make people believe that this story, there's something more to this story other than it's just a really good story. They're trying to make it seem like this kid is going to turn into an all-time great or something by the kind of stats that they're putting next to his name. Just say he's having a hell of a 6-7 game run and leave it at that.
Yeah, and I think that's, you know, again, it's like, you know, in the old days trying to sell papers, right? And you kind of put all eyeballs on the sets. And so, yeah, I think that's, you know, that's the part of that, you know, that hyperbole that is the machine. But I think that if you're looking at building a championship team, and I love the way you said, you know, could be like a Tony Parker running under the radar, because that might be all you need with a team that has, you know, Amari, Melo, and Chandler and all those pieces. You need somebody who can just run the show and can score when they need to. You need them to make a big bucket, not afraid of the moment, but at the same time can get some moving, get some things going. And I think the long-term success is going to be their ability, because where D'Antoni's system breaks down and broke down in Phoenix is that we all know in playoff series you need to get 2 to 3 stops. Can you get that? Right? I mean, his teams never got blown out. They always played tough down the stretch, but they could never get those 1, 2, or 3 stops they needed in the fourth to get over the top. And that's what you hope someone like Tyson Chandler or someone provides you with that opportunity to get those stops, because that's where the success is going to come from in the playoffs. Can they get those 2 or 3 stops down the stretch that can get them to win at the end on the defensive end? And that's something we haven't seen with his teams. And I think the only saving grace he has with that is someone like Tyson Chandler, who will impose a need to play defense. That's just who he is. And he can get people to follow him, like he did in Dallas. So I think that's part of, hopefully that's what they're banking on down the stretch, because that's where it's all going to come together.
So we got PhD back, and I want to toss it to him. So we were talking about where would you put, when you're thinking about Jeremy Lin and his ceiling and where he could wind up in comparison to other young top point guards in the league, sure, i.e. Steph Curry, Ricky Rubio, John Wall, Tyreke Evans, Kyrie Irving, where do you put him in that pecking order, and where do you see him finishing up? So projecting, because remember, you know, this kid is only 23 years old. He's still pretty young in his development. Where do you see him, you know, if you're picking one of these guys, who are you taking first?
So, Kyrie Irving. I mean, that's the easy, quick answer. Kid's amazing. He's averaging 18 points a game. He is the clear-cut rookie of the year so far, in my opinion. But I think Jeremy Lin is really interesting because out of these players you mentioned, Curry, Rubio, Wall, Evans, Irving, he's clearly the best Like, he's clearly, Lynn is clearly on the best team out of all those guys. And he clearly has the most talent around him with Carmelo, Chandler, and Stoudemire. So in some ways, you're comparing apples and oranges. So it's somewhat tough to gauge, but right now I would say that only Irvin and Curry, in my opinion, are playing better ball than him right now. On the same level or better ball. How do I see him projecting? I think we need more time because teams are going to start to adjust more to what he's able to do on the court. They're going to start to take away what he does well and force him to work on some of his weaknesses, which right now it looks like ball handling isn't his strength, which is kind of odd for a point guard. So I think the more reps he gets, the better he's going to be. Think about Chris Wanky a couple years ago, guy who played baseball for a while, kind of like Brandon Wheaton this year with Oklahoma State, came into the league, the NFL, at 28. You know, we kind of looked at him and said, well, he's 28, but his body is more like 22, 23 because he started so late. I think we can make that same comparison for Jeremy Lin. Now, he's 23, which nowadays is kind of, you know, most guys are 23 in the NBA, have 2, 3, 4 years of experience. So I think if he gets the reps, I can see him as a top 10 point guard in the next 2 years.
Okay. This is where I want to take the conversation real quick, and then I'm going to bring in our special guest, Dr. Eric Mays. Let him chime in, and then we're going to move on and start to hit on some of the topics that Dr. Eric Mays would like to touch base on. But one more question on the whole Jeremy Lin situation before I bring in Doc Mays. How much is this guy worth to an owner? Do you think this is a guy who you would throw franchise money at? Now we're a global perspective radio show. This is Renegade Radio. All right, we're big picture. This is big picture radio. So thinking about that, you know, how much is Jeremy Lin worth to you as an owner? Because right now you're getting him for cheap. I mean, dirt cheap. How much is he worth to an owner? Because I think he's going to be a free agent at the end of the season because I think he was on a temporary, a real short 10-day deal to begin with or a non-guaranteed deal. So his deal is going to be up at the end of the season, and then he's going to be a free agent. So, TAD, how much money are you throwing at Jeremy Lin? What is he worth to your franchise?
I think you put him in the top third of players getting paid right now, so probably that $8 to $10 million per year at least. Because if you take a step back, this young man has value to a franchise similar to what Yao Ming brought to the Houston Rockets. You're bringing in an entire new demographic to the NBA globally. And from a dollar's profitability, revenue-producing standpoint, the sky is literally the limit. You know, Devon had talked about his trip to China a couple of summers ago, maybe it was this past summer, in terms of seeing so many American athletes, specifically basketball players, trying to tap into that market. And I think Kobe Bryant is probably the biggest name that's been pretty successful at doing that. So when you look at Jeremy Lin, you have a young man who's able to tap into multiple global markets that traditionally the NBA has not been able to penetrate as deep as they'd like to. So in that regard, I think you have to pay the young man probably a bit more than you would if you were just looking at his production, which has been very strong so far.
Okay. D. Wills, where are you at on what you pay Jeremy Lin?
To add on to what Phil's, all you have to look at is he's already benefited the folks of New York City because he solved the feud between the MSG and Time Warner. I mean, that's right there is the impact. I think a lot of it depends on how they perform down the stretch and what they do in the playoffs. They're going to resign this kid if he continues to grow the way he's growing. But, you know, what the deal that they throw at him will depend on how they perform in the playoffs and where they see that potential going. But I think Phil hit it right on the head. You think about New York City, you know, the place in the world around entertainment. You think about the broad reach that he can have. and what it would mean to the NBA. You know, you already see the impact economically on the Knicks franchise, on MSG in terms of the arena, the organization, the people behind it. So he's already having an economic impact. So I think, you know, if they throw $8 to $10 million at him, you know, looking at the return on investment, that's going to be huge. And so, you know, I think that, you know, but a lot of it will be dictated on how they perform down the stretch, how he gels with Carmelo and Amari around this stuff. I mean, I think that's where it's going to be interesting. And depending on how he plays, it's going to be interesting what that means to someone like Amari if they're looking to make a move at some point, right? You know, does this allow for some different – or doesn't this allow for them to look for a different type of player, maybe move Amari? So that might be put into the equation as well.
Okay. All right. So I'm gonna let Doc come in real quick, and I'm going to get his perspective on the situation. And then I'm going to take the gloves off on this Jeremy Lin topic. Give it another couple minutes, and then we're gonna see where we at after that. So just let y'all know. All right, I'm gonna bring in the Doc. All right, I'm gonna let PhD do the introduction.
So along the lines of the last couple of weeks, we've had several successful former athletes who have transitioned from a very successful athletic career to the world of academics. Such as Alan Sack, Damon Williams. We're bringing in Eric T. Mays, a.k.a. Eric T. Mays, a.k.a. we just gonna call him Doc today. As an athlete, Dr. Mays has an incredible story of a one-time walk-on athlete, student-athlete who became the co-captain of the University of Michigan Wolverines 1997 National Championship football team. Yeah, that same squad that featured Heisman Trophy winner Charles Woodson and the same squad who I was cheering for when they beat up on Ryan Leaf and the Washington State football team in the 1998 Rose Bowl. Since finishing his football career in 1998, Dr. Mays has been a very, very busy individual. Eric has obtained his PhD in educational psychology from Howard University, and also has recently added an additional graduate degree from Harvard this past year in educational policy and management. He has served in administration at Wayne State University, in addition to becoming a sought-after public speaker that has led him to speaking engagements at the White House, as well as being featured by ESPN, Sports Illustrated, and the LA Times. More information concerning his story and his availability as a speaker for your organization can be found on his website of Dr. Eric Mays with an E, MAYES.com, DrEricMays.com. Former Wolverine teammate and 1997 Heisman Trophy winner, Super Bowl champion, and former NFL Defensive Player of the Year, Charles Woodson, described Doc Mays as a person who inspires people and communities across the globe to have the courage to follow their dreams and pursue greatness. We're about to tap into some of that greatness tonight. On a personal note, Eric and I share the same hometown of Kalamazoo, Michigan, so I'm especially proud of his accomplishments and excited to have him join the Real Sports Guys tonight. So, fellas, let's introduce and welcome Eric T. Mays. Welcome to the show.
Hey, what's up, fellas? Phil, thank you for that introduction.
Happy to have you. Glad to have you.
Thank you. I'm glad to join you all tonight.
Someone pass the baton back to the game changer so we can touch on this Jeremy Lin situation, because I know Eric has a perspective on it.
Yeah, so Doc, I want you to jump in. We're discussing the Jeremy Lin situation. Like I said before you came on, I'm going to get your perspective. And then I'm going to take the gloves off and ask some tough questions around this situation. What I think are some tough questions. This may be easy for the RSG crew, but we'll see. We'll see when we get there. So what's your perspective on the Jeremy Lin hype, his performance, and the correlation between the two?
Okay. Now, I haven't seen Jeremy Lin play. So I won't speak on his performance, but I'll speak on the phenomenon, and I've sort of seen and observed the phenomenon. It's so complex when you think about it. Because the NBA, what are we talking, 15, 20 guys per team, a couple dozen teams, a small number, hundreds of high school basketball players, hundreds of college basketball players, hundreds of thousands of high school basketball players. And so the opportunity to play in the NBA is such a limited opportunity for a lot of folks. And so then you have Jeremy Lin, who's the non-traditional, small college, Harvard, Ivy League college grad, Asian-American, right? So he's an outlier from the traditional NBA player, anyway. So that in of itself creates this awe, almost this cult following. It gives people who never thought that they would have an opportunity to play in the NBA or to reach those heights in the NBA to do so, right? And so that's one piece of it, right? So those folks that root for the underdog, that dream the impossible dream, you got those folks. And so you've got those legitimate folks who believe in the possibility, and so that possibility to take them out of the mundane sort of existence, the day-to-day drudgery of work, job, school, whatever that is, to be able to dream, to think that the dream that they have inside of them, there's a possibility that they can actualize that. So that's that piece. And so that's the authentic human spirit, one component. Another component are those folks who actually enjoy seeing somebody, a non-African-American man in the NBA, excelling on a high level, right? Because there's a bit of envy, I'm sure, by some folks with the large number of men, particularly large number of black men that dominate the NBA, right, in terms of statistical numbers, right? Y'all folks probably know the percent of black men in the NBA. I mean, if you flip that with the percent of black men in the U.S. population, right, if blacks make up 12% of the U.S. population and black men may make up 6% of that, and for them to make up, I don't know, 80, 90%, 70, 70 is a low number, so between 80 to 90 of the NBA. I mean, so you've got that piece too. So then there's those folks who may be rooting for Lynn because of that, because that envy and jealousy, and they want to see something different. So I think it's a multitude of things why people are following him and why people are excited about it and why it's a phenomenon. But I would also say I would just oppose that to Cam Newton, right? And I would say Cam Newton is an awesome story. I think he breaks the monotony of – for those folks who want to see diversity at quarterback in the NFL, right? They've seen the traditional white quarterback in the NFL, and they want to see something different. But his story hasn't been able to garner sort of the same cult following, right? And I think those were the issues that we have to deal with, the uncomfortable conversations about race that folks normally don't want to get into. But I would ask the same questions, just as I asked, why Lynn, why not Newton?
Excellent perspective. And I'm gonna play off that, and I'm going to keep it going from there. And you kind of started to hit on some of the points that, we talk about on this show. I always throw it out there to folks that say, well, I like college basketball, but I don't like the NBA. Well, I always say, and I'll tell people to their face, that usually to me boils down, and that's code for I'm okay with rich white, and I'm not okay with I'm okay with white, rich, and old, and I'm not okay with young, rich, and black. To me, that's the difference between college hoops and NBA hoops, is what you're okay with. You either like the college establishment, which is rich, white, and old, or you like the NBA, which is young, rich, and black. And if you don't like the NBA, I think it's because you have a problem with young, rich, and black, more than anything, because the ball is definitely superior on the NBA level. Now, I want to ask this question, and I want to throw this out to the booth, and I'll let D. Wills tackle it first. You know, we talk about this is the United States of America, and Doc Mays hit on it a bit when he talked about the fact that a guy like Cam Newton, who has a great story as well, doesn't get as much play as Jeremy Lin. Floyd Mayweather came out and said the only reason Jeremy Lin is getting all his credit, and you can feel however you want to feel about Floyd, but I think he has a point, is because he's Asian. Now, again, Doc hit on this. Doc's very astute, very on point with his analysis. Doc hit on this a little bit. He talked about the fact that, you know, there's a novelty to an Asian American excelling at a game that blacks usually excel at. And D. Willis, you hit on it too when you brought up, you know, kind of on the slide, you talked about Jason Sehorn a little bit and his run as a Giants starting cornerback and how that was a big deal and how he was given a huge contract, for the most part unwarranted in my opinion. He had some good seasons, but I think he got that money because of the novelty of what he was doing and who he connected with in the New York market. How much is this whole situation? Again, I placed it third on my list because I think if Jeremy Lin were producing the way he's producing in somewhere else, same kid, same numbers, he's playing this well in Utah, I don't think it's as big of a story as it is coming out of New York. So I think that plays a huge piece of it. But I do think his race is playing a major part in this. So if Jeremy Lin is black, is this story as big? D. Wills.
I say no, it's not as big. But, you know, one of the great things about, you know, if you're on the playgrounds, we always say ball doesn't lie. Right? Don't we say that? What's
yep.
great about basketball at the end of the day is that players play, players who can't. So the story only holds for so long, particularly in a league like the NBA, if you're going to do it. What's great about the NBA is the story will define itself. And if he can play, what's interesting is I don't really listen as much to what people are saying. What I listen is what ball players say about him. And slowly, if you listen to a lot of the ball players, there's some ball players who are looking at him like, this kid can play. Someone was saying they got switched on him in the post. And they're like, this guy, 6'4", he's big. You know, you start hearing other ball players saying, you know, once I get up here and play with this cat can play. And so that's the echo I started looking at. And I love when Doc Mays talked about Cam Newton because y'all all knew I was on that last year. So I love that Doc Mays brought that up because the same argument he was just making, I was making about Cam. I thought he was an incredible story enduring all the pressure he endured, overcoming that. Even in the offseason, people saying he couldn't play, then had this record-breaking rookie year. And had some fanfare, but nothing like this. And so I think, you know, we always talk about on our show, I mean, race is always part of that context. But what's great about the game of basketball is that players play. And that's what I love about this game, because at the end of the day, because you have so few, that you can't waste time on that. Either he's going to rise to it or he's going to fall to it. And for him, I think that is the best situation to be in. It's not like a T-ball situation where we're altering and we're trying to mask things that can't be masked and we're trying to overcompensate things that can't be sustained over time. What we are finding with Lin, it's going to be you're going to have to play because in the game of basketball, there's no place to hide, particularly if you're point guard. So I think that's what's great about his story. At some point, his story is going to play out. And I think that's what's going to be the kind of the defining moment for him.
PhD. Your take.
Yeah, I think you gentlemen have hit the nail on the head. It's a very interesting phenomenon. I'll build on Devon's point of this kid can play. You know, you don't score 20-plus in 7-8 straight games without having some serious game. These are 400 of the best basketball players in the world. Okay? So from that perspective, like I said in the beginning of the show, I've been enjoying this process. While I think it's really tough not to analyze all the different aspects that are going on in terms of, you know, the cultural aspect, just the ceiling on how high and how far this whole thing can go. I've been really enjoying the whole process and the way they're playing. One of the things that I've had a hard time with is, why all of a sudden are we expecting Carmelo to conform to him? This guy who's been released by two different teams.
Yeah, but PAD, that's because ESPN has made this kid, you know, they're comparing him to all these all-time greats, and that's creating these ridiculous expectations on the young man. That's why I'm upset with ESPN, is because they've created turmoil where there was no turmoil. I mean, they're asking asinine questions about a guy who's a proven 9-10 year stud. I won't say, and again, I'm on the outside looking in on the Carmelo bandwagon, but he is an excellent player offensively. He's an excellent offensive player in the NBA. And wondering whether or not he can conform to a kid who's had a nice run for 7-8 games. So continue with your point, but I agree with you.
Yeah, I pass. I've spoken my piece on it.
All right. So, you know, we're gonna keep revisiting this Jeremy Lin story as it continues to develop, because it is an amazing story, you know, for all the reasons that we talked about, from the human aspect of it, from what this kid has accomplished, and what he's been able to do on the biggest stage, in MSG, playing for the Knicks, one of the most storied franchises in NBA history, coming in and really revitalizing that team and getting it back on track, saving the career of his coach. All the things that he's done has really ignited and brought some energy to the NBA season that, in my opinion, was lacking a little bit of the momentum that it had built last season. It finally started to pick up some momentum and gain some steam. But now I want to turn it over to PhD. And we're going to get into some questions that PhD is going to get in the interview on our special guest. Again, we have Dr. Eric Mays joining us tonight. And PhD is going to get into asking a few questions of Dr. Mays. So if you want to go ahead and do that, go for it.
Sure. I'll take the first question and I'll pass over to Devon. Doc, you have an incredible story in terms of being a walk-on, you know, which is amazing to me, because I saw you play in high school. I mean, you were a heck of a ball player. Can you talk a little bit about the ride, the road that you took from your last high school football game to the point where you ended up being a captain on the team in Michigan athletically?
Okay. So, fellas and Phil specifically, I decided not to play football in college, believe it or not. I had scholarship offers. I was recruited. But I took a visit to a school down in Tennessee out of high school. I was recruited by the local universities, Kalamazoo area, state of Michigan. And I decided that I'll backtrack a little bit. I was asked to come speak. If y'all remember, during 19, it was 93. It was when the riots broke out in L.A. from the Rodney King verdict, right? And so the church in Kalamazoo, might have been Galilee, I'm not sure the name of it, but they asked the student-athletes to come down and speak. And so I shared my piece. I spoke my piece about my analysis of the situation and why the folks were rioting in L.A. There was a woman in the audience, and she decided to sponsor me to go on a trip. And so I took a trip, a black college tour. I'd never been to a black college campus. I went and I visited several of them, and I fell in love with it. Specifically, I fell in love with Xavier New Orleans. Gave up my college scholarships, went to Xavier New Orleans, didn't want to play sports anymore, wanted to go to college, major pre-med psychology, chose academics. And that was based on my visit to Tennessee State, which was one of my football visits. I took a visit there. I'd never been on a plane before. And being on an HBCU campus changed my life. It changed my perspective, how I saw the world, and I wanted to. It's where I wanted to be. So So I went on that Black College tour. I took my transcript with me. I got admitted to Xavier New Orleans on the spot. And as far as I knew, that was the end of my football career. I enrolled in Xavier. I was down there about 6 months before I got homesick and was ready to come home. I had good grades, 3.1, right? 3.1 was good, first-generation college student. My grandmother went to the third grade. My mom and my pops grew up on farms, picking cotton as sharecroppers. Both high school graduates but hadn't graduated from college. So for me, you know, just going to college and having access to college, you know, getting a 3.1, getting into college was a big deal, considering that my brother, my older brother, my older sister, and my other two, one sister who was adopted and another cousin who lived with us, I happened to be the first high school graduate of those group of folks. And I fell in love with Xavier. I was homesick. I had never been to a state that hadn't touched Michigan. So everywhere I've been to, I drove, right? Indiana, Wisconsin, Illinois. That was it. Maybe Ohio, I think, when I was 2 or 3 years old. And so I transferred with my grades. There were two schools that I applied to. I applied to Michigan State and the University of Michigan. And the love for Michigan was motivated by one of the books I saw on your website, which was the Fab Five. I sat and I read the book, and I looked through the book, and I pictured it, and I imagined myself at the University of Michigan. I was admitted to the University of Michigan. I got tickets like everybody else. I sat in the stands, and we played Colorado. They came to Michigan, and Cordell Stewart threw a Hail Mary.
No. Yeah. That hurt.
In the corner of the end zone, and I sat there in that stadium with all of the rest of, in the student section, and I said to myself, and anybody that was on that team that's listening, please forgive me, but I said to myself, man, they sorry. I need to be on that team. I can play here. And I went out for the team the next semester, walked onto the team. So that was sort of the start. But I'll pause there if y'all got any questions for the first half of that story.
What I love about, and I said some things too when that ball was thrown as well. Was that who caught that ball? Johnson or somebody that caught it from Detroit caught that ball. So I said some things. What I love, the part of the story that I love, because this is part as well we want to talk to you about, is the premium you put also in education, and how that's been a guiding point for you. Can you talk a little bit about, even as a student athlete, how you balance that as a priority in that environment in terms of that continue to have that value for the education, the student side of the athlete?
Okay, all right. And I'll back up because there are a lot of important sort of steps that I need to tell y'all about in high school. Pre-high school, I was the typical young man, smart. Back then, being smart was cool, right? That was before gangster rap. It was before crack cocaine hit our neighborhoods. It was before being a thug was one of the or a rapper was one of the best things you could, you know, be coming out of our communities, right? It was back when being smart and, you know, maybe wearing some eyes shirts was in, right?
I remember that very well. Yeah. You put creases
in
your pants.
I was born to that, so I knew, like, remember we listened to music that, like, made you feel good? Talk about Whitney Houston or Lionel Richie or Michael Jackson. You know, music you could sit and listen to with your mom and dad. So music that could tell you that, you know, you were somebody and that made a difference. You could make a difference in the world. You know, we are the world, right? So I love school. I always loved school. I was smart, and being smart was okay. It was when we got into seventh grade and eighth grade when kind of that transition changed. But for me, athletics allowed me to continue to be smart and the place to continue to be smart and it not be challenged, it not be a problem, right? And so it wasn't questioned about me being smart. Was I eligible was often the question. Yes, I'm eligible, so hey, no problem, right? But in the ninth grade, I have to give a lot of credit to my basketball coach at the time because I wasn't aware of what it would take to get to college, Peter Jarrett, because, you know, my ninth grade first hour class was gym. And, of course, if you know Michigan, who wants to go shower, get dressed, go to school, and then go to gym when you have to take swimming in the middle of winter, right? So I took my schedule, of course, to my basketball coach for him to fix it. And he looked at my schedule, and I was signed up for, like, shop, you know, I don't know, home ec, I might be exaggerating, automobiles. But whatever I was signed up for, they were not college prep courses, right? And so that experience, him changing my schedule and put me in college prep courses, even though I may not have wanted to be, it gave me the foundation to create the options. But there was also something fundamentally different that happened to me because by the time I got to ninth grade, I no longer was as motivated for academics, as motivated to excel, to be a scholar, right? To excel at being a scholar. But I read the autobiography of Malcolm X. It was given to me in ninth grade, and it forever changed my mind about education, right? And the importance of education, the way Malcolm studied the dictionary, the way he read books when he was locked up, and he decided to make time serve him instead of serving time. So that was a key piece for me, that those two things. One, the decision by my head coach, basketball coach, the reading of the autobiography of Malcolm X. But the precursor to all of that was my mom and my dad as a young guy, right? My mom bought the encyclopedias. My mom and dad bought the encyclopedias. And so we would have, that's before internet, when you actually had books and shelves. We had a library in the basement. And those encyclopedias, and I fell in love with the F encyclopedia. Because it was the one, I think it might have been the Britannica set. It was the one set that had color pictures. The map section also had color pictures where you could feel the maps and the mountains on the page.
That's right.
But the F section had the flags and all of the flags of the world. And I fell in love with those books and I fell in love with reading. And to this day, I still love books and I still love reading. So a combination of things, my home structure, and I'll give you one more sort of example. When I was in the sixth grade, we had yearbooks. Last day of school, Northeastern Elementary for Phil, Kalamazoo. What?
Absolutely.
So in the sixth grade, we had those autograph books, and I didn't have the money to get an autograph book. So my mom made me an autograph book out of cardboard. Out of like construction paper and yarn, and she put my picture in the front. And I just thought it was the dumbest thing, and they were gonna laugh at me and talk junk. But when I opened it, you know, I opened it and I saw my mom. She had signed it, and in there she said, "Eric, I've seen you through 6 years of school, and I look forward to seeing you through 11 more years." And I thought to myself, like, man. My mom don't understand. I'm only going to be in school 6 more years, 12th grade. I graduate, right? Mm. But my mom was already sowing the seeds, even though none of her other children before me had graduated from college, let alone were going to graduate from high school at that point before I did. But she was sowing those seeds in me. So to some point I had that sort of that foundation that education was important. I was helped, assisted along the way. I was open. My mind was opened up to the importance of an education through reading Malcolm. And then, to be honest with you, I decided that I wanted it. I made the decision that I wanted to be smart. I enjoyed school. I was smart, and that was the commitment that I was making to myself.
Okay.
So,
Well, one of the things I want to follow up a little bit with that is that, you know, and this might carry a little story. I mean, one of the things that we've been talking a lot about with this discussion about college athletes and this greater emphasis that I know it's been talking around the NCAA and other areas about the level of engagement in other academic part of the institution in terms of academic life of the institution. You know, if you were making, if you're on a blue ribbon committee or if you're on a committee trying to make recommendations about how to create greater engagement for college athletes in the academic life of the institution, what recommendations would you make?
Make it a priority. College athletes, probably more than any other students at the university, follow the rules and regulations. They are coachable. The large majority of them, if you think about the fact that they have, and we're talking largely, Austin, we're talking mostly scholarship athletes. So you think of all the hundreds of thousands of high school students. This small group of students were selected because they took the courses, the college prep, they received the SAT or ACT score, and then they excelled at an extremely high level in their sport. So to be honest, these young people represent a highly coached and disciplined group of young folks. So I think really just a university or a group of universities, college association, right, NCAA, just has to make it a priority. That's it. It just has to be a priority. These young folks will do what they're required to do because they love their folk. They love their sports. They love competing, and obviously they've excelled academically, and many of them, to be honest, many of them love school and learning, right? Because those playbooks, specifically in football, for those folks that don't know, the days of just showing up without reading and studying that playbook are gone, right, and just playing. So I think it just has to be a priority. I know that seems simple, but all they have to do is make it a priority. Some schools make it a priority that all of their basketball players, I don't know if this is NC2A, they just have to tuck in their jerseys, right? That's and they all do it, right? They all have to. They all wear the same shoes. They all wear the same helmets, right? So all they have to do is just be a priority, an institutional priority, a universal priority, and an But it can start from the association and it making it a priority to students to engage themselves, probably just pushing the whole idea that they're Americans, right? They have to participate in democracy, civic engagement. They have to use their voice, right? They have to use their voice, right? Their voice, freedom of expression, talking about the fundamental right to be an American, right? So they have to use their voice, right? So I think that's part of it. They have to engage and engage citizenry, right? They have to voting, right? They have to just some simple things. I think that for whatever reason, that button just hasn't been turned on. But it will be, and it will be because they're going to be – and folks have to have a voice. They'll realize that, right? And so it will be. But that's what – so to answer your question – they just have to make it a priority.
Okay.
This is great. We are on with the Real Sports Guys right now. If any callers want to call in, they can talk to Doc Mays at 347-989-0844. We're covering a lot of stuff, sports, education, stuff going on in society. Right now we've got a caller calling in from Georgia. Ferris has a question for Doc Mays. Go right ahead, Ferris.
Doc Mays, what's good?
What's up, Ferris?
You got it. Look, I got two questions. They're along the same topic. I know a brother right now working on his dissertation. He's doing some studies regarding black male athletes at D1 schools or Division I schools in regards to being on the team but still feel like an outsider regarding the team. In addition to that, I was saying if you ever experienced that, or can you speak to that, or you think that's still going on today?
What's his specific situation, being an outsider? Why? What's the reason?
He basically speaking like as far as like resources, attention, coaching, mentorship, and things like that in regards to feeling almost isolated in regards to his counterparts, other white males on the team. And he was doing a study, conducting a study to see if that was the same experience that other black male athletes were experiencing.
Okay. All right. That's all right. Good question. That's involved. A lot of that depends on the situation. I don't know. I know that for somebody coming from a predominantly African-American community, go to a university where you are an eighth of a student body population, or 8% of a student, that may be actually pretty high, 8%. Let's say go like 4% of a 50,000 student body, that in of itself can be isolating, right? That in of itself can be a cultural shock, right? So that can be a culture shock both for you and sometimes for those folks at the institution, right? Not just because, there's culture around within ethnic groups, and then there's culture SES, socioeconomic status, right? And then there's just culture based on your neighborhood or the side of town or the block in the neighborhood on the side of town, right? So there's all these cultural differences. So it would be hard for me to speak to that generally, but what I can do is speak to the phenomenon with folks, and I'll give an example. At Michigan, I had it on both ends, right? I experienced it with two guys. There was one guy who came from Detroit, played at a school in Cooley, and he told me at Michigan that he only saw white people like at the gas station or at the mall, right? He didn't see him often. I had a white guy on the same team from Ligonier, Indiana. He said he didn't see white people. I mean, he didn't see black people at all, right? His situation was similar. I think he said he saw him at the gas station, and my colleague from Detroit said he saw him at the mall. So both of those polarized examples existed. Now, I'm sure, Ferris, I'm sure that there are young black men at universities that are predominantly white, largely white, and they are isolated, and it's not one, and it's not two, but it happens. It's an experience. I'm confident in that, because oftentimes brothers that get scholarships, they go to these small schools because they give them an opportunity to go to school for free, right? And they may be one of seven or six. Right, I think I remember reading Vernon Jordan's book, Vernon Can Read, when he was at DePaul in Greencastle, Indiana. He might have been one of six. Right, so all of those polarizing type examples, they exist. Right, so I guess I'm sure it happens. I'm sure it happens. It's an experience, right? But they are remedies. Right, and that's why one of the things folks have to realize, there are a lot of things you have to do, and these are for the young athletes listening. If you're going to play isn't the reason why you should necessarily choose a university. You want to go to somewhere where you fit, where it fits you, right? Where you can walk away from this university later and say, yeah, that's where I went to school 15, 20 years later, right? Where you can see yourself with these young men, these coaches who are going to help you grow to be a man, right? They're going to help you and give you the tools you need to succeed in life. Those are some of the reasons you want to choose a university. Right. So I hope that answers your question. You had a second part, Ferris.
Question. I know my experience from observation, in addition to speaking with a friend, she actually was a basketball captain at Michigan on the girls' basketball team. And I know we were speaking about specifically, let's say, black athletes pertaining to the major that coaches steer them in a direction of taking, such as lightweight majors to some degree, such as general education, communication, or sports entertainment promotion. So the major that most athletes have to pick based on being an athlete, versus taking, let's say, a hardcore science or something along that nature. What's your take on that?
Yep, I think it's twofold. One is that sometimes students who apply to play sports at these at particular universities, they may not academically qualify to get in a particular school. Right, but because they're athletic, they demonstrated such athletic prowess, they're admitted to the university at another school, within the university, right? And so that may be a school or a program that doesn't have the strict admission, as strict or as strenuous admission requirements as the other schools within the university, right? So that's one piece. Two, I think it is far too often traditionally athletes have been pushed into majors that aren't in their best interest, and often large number of those are poor and black athletes because they often represent first-generation college athletes who don't know to say, no, I want a degree that will provide me additional earning potential when I leave, in addition to a certification or a licensure. So, yes, I think that happens. I think it happens often. But I think that the flip of that is that we call them kids, but they aren't kids when they turn 18. They're young men and women. And these young men and women at 18, just as if they can sign up and go to war, right, sign up and serve the military, sign up and defend the country, these young men and women have to begin to take some onus, right, for their lives, take some responsibility. I know it's not to say they're solely responsible, right? But to not take any responsibility for a major after you've been there 2 years and decide, you know what, this isn't what I want to major in. I'm going to decide to do something else. So it's twofold, right? Most situations are complicated. Yes, it happens. They're pushed into those, but at the same time, often. Sometimes, just probably as frequently, they choose majors that don't require them to invest as much in their academic well-being as they do in their athletic. Fellas, y'all still there?
Yep. Right. Yeah, just soaking it all in, man.
This is Devon a little bit. I think you're hitting into some. I've been sitting here because the fellas know that stuff you hitting is right in my wheelhouse. So we could talk about this all night, and I love this because I think part of what it is how do we help build capacity? And I know you've been writing a lot about leadership and capacity building and what can you do in terms of, you know, position yourself for success. Can you talk a little bit about some things that as folks are thinking about, you know, what are some of the things that you need to do to think about leadership, capacity, mentorship, all those things. Can you talk a little bit about that? Because you're really hitting on how do we build our capacity to be successful and get to where we want.
Okay. I would say this and this applies to me where I am in my life, and I think it can apply to the fellas, you all that are sitting there running the show, and the folks that are listening, that we should look for people who are doing the things that we aspire, right? I'm a big reader of biographies, right? I love to read the narrative, right? The path, the journey. It helps give me context, right? To understand that this person just didn't show up and become great in 3 or 4 days, right? And so context is important, studying narratives, but finding those people that exist, that are closest to you, and they may not. Let's say if the process that you're involved in is a 10-step process, you may not be able to touch number 10, the person who's at 10 every day and have access to them. But if you're at 1 or if you're at 2, you may be able to touch the person that's at 3 and 4. So that's the person that you may want to reach out to study, to talk to find, to develop a relationship, right? So that this person can help you build capacity, right? So this person can help you grow and develop in the ways that you aspire to grow and develop, right? So I think that's one thing, just simply identifying people who are on the path that you want to be on, who have made some of the accomplishments that you see for yourself and that you want to achieve. And so that's one. And so I think it's important for parents specifically, and not just for student-athletes, but for student-athletes to find examples, whether they're coaches who both prepare their students for academic, athletic, and life success, for not for all three of those. And then just, you know, to say, okay, this is a particular program. This is a particular person, and this person I know will help prepare me, right, or my team or my child to make it to the next level. So I think that's one thing. We just have to find those people. We have to access those people. And believe it or not, if what you aspire to be isn't something terrible, right, normally the people that you reach out to will be approachable and be willing to help, right, and will extend themselves in return. So I think that's one. Just simply finding folks and sort of studying their lives as much as possible and seeing if they'll be willing to tutor and work with you.
Well, we're going to bring the game changer back in. Marcus, I know you've been waiting on hold on this, so we'll bring you back into the game.
Yeah, so, you know, the points you've hit on education and being an athlete are amazing, and we appreciate you sharing your story with the listeners out there. These are the kind of stories that we want to bring to you through this platform, through this format, Renegade Radio, Real Sports Guys, RSG. This is what we want to bring to you, stories of real people out there who are real folks doing great things, invested in helping and giving back to others through their knowledge, through their actions, all those good things. So I want to thank Doc Mays for doing that. Doc Mays is going to stay on with us for a little bit and get into as we move on through the show. So, you know, we just finished up a couple weeks back. We finished up our NBA Top 50 where we went through and we redid the NBA Top 50. Each of us came up with our 50 greatest players in NBA history. So now, you know, we like to make lists and have debates and have those barbershop conversations. So now we're going to go into our top 20 hip-hop songs of all time. Now, PhD is going to lead us off, but before we go into that, I want Doc Mays, he's got his top three. So I want him to drop it on us real quick. And then we're gonna see where Doc Mays is at, and then we're gonna let PhD go. So go ahead, Doc.
Okay, now check. Now it's much easier for me to give you my top three, top 10, top two universities than it is for me to give you my top three greatest rap songs of all time, right? I'm just going to throw a couple out there because I can't claim, you know, that I just got a list of some of these that's just, and these are the top sort of songs that have touched me right over my life in no particular order, but I'm throwing them out there. We got Sugar Hill Gang, Rapper's Delight, MC Light, Light as a Rock. I'm going to throw five MC in the bag, treat them like they want to be treated. Heavy D, we got our own thing. Right. Dougie and Stick, you know what I'm saying? The Show. LL, I'm Bad, I Need Love. I'm going to throw Hammer in the mix. Let's Get It Started. Right. You know, where he came at, LN, DJ Run. EPMD, You Got to Chill. I can't, you know, I got to EPMD in there. Biggie, Sky is the Limit, and then Notorious Thugs. You know, it just is what it is. Houdini, One Love, Friends, Ice Cube, Stay True to the Game. Public Enemy, Fight the Power. Big Daddy Kane, Smooth Operator, Ain't No Half-Stepping. Above the Law, Black Superman. Ghetto Boy, Straight Gangsterism, My Mind Playing Tricks on Me, Dead Prayers, Mind Sex. CeeLo Green, I'ma Die Trying. Outkast, In Due Time. Common, Asada, DMX, Slipping. Nas, One Mic. JJ Fad, Jay-Z, Hard Knock Life, Renegade, Slick Rick, Hey Young World. And it's a tie. If I got to choose a tie at the top, it's between Tupac, Keep Your Head Up, and Self-Destruction.
Whoa. Well, where's the flex bomb? We got to drop a bomb on him.
and that's it.
Right, that's it.
Excellent. Greatly appreciate you visiting, Doc. appreciate you coming on. I know you got to get going. We'll give you a round of applause.
Hey, fellas, I want to thank y'all, one, for opening up the waves and having this critical discussion around sports, culture, education, current events. It's necessary. It's good to see y'all brothers on here sharing your voices, sharing your thoughts. Keep doing your thing, and I appreciate y'all for having me.
All right, thank you, brother.
Absolutely. Glad to have you, Eric. And for our listeners that want to learn more about Eric and possibly have him as a speaker for your organization, again, Doc Mays can be reached at his website at Dr. Eric Mays. That's M-A-Y-E-S, DrEricMays.com. So feel free to contact Doc. And again, thank you so much for visiting, and I'll shoot it back to the Game Changer.
All right. So, PhD has got to step away for a moment. We're going to have D. Wills. I'm going to call the audible real quick. D. Wills is going to give us his 20 through 16 of his list of hip-hop's greatest, 20 greatest songs of all time. So,
you made me come up in here like this.
Yeah.
I tell you what now, this was difficult. For me, I've been switching things. I was switching up even an hour before the show. Even when Doc was doing his list, I had some ones on this list. But, hey, you got to pick 20, and so this is how it goes. It Was a Good Day, Ice Cube at 20. Hard Knock Life, Ghetto Anthem, Jay-Z. Taking Annie, an American song, tradition, and flipping it for Marcy. Love it. It's Like That, Run DMC. Planet Rock. Afrika Bambaataa and Soul Sonic Force and Cream, Wu Tang at 16.
So let me recap that real quick. So you had Ice Cube, Today Was a Good Day. You know, I had the Boost, you had the Chronic, the Lakers beat the Supersonics.
That's right. That's
and I think
right.
recently somebody on the internet pinpointed exactly what day that was.
Yeah.
That was such a good day for Ice Cube. Hard Knock Life. Okay. What was after Hard Knock?
It's Like That, Run DMC.
Oh, yes. It's Like That, Run DMC. And then what was your last two?
17, Planet Rock.
Okay.
It was this. For you young folks, y'all need to go back and check it out. And then Cream, Wu-Tang.
All right. And then Cash Rules Everything Around Me. Cream, get the money. Dollar bill, y'all. At the back end of the list, I can't really front on that. Quality joints. Hard Knock Life for Jay. I don't know if that's my favorite Jay song. Or even my most impactful Jay song. So why don't you get into that a little bit? Tell people how you began to formulate your list. Let them into the mind of D. Wills and how he began to formulate this list.
A lot of times when these lists get formulated, sometimes I think we get away from the essence of hip hop. And sometimes what makes hip hop great historically is, and if you think about the origin of hip hop, out of nothing came something. Hip-hop created out of the Bronx when built the highway, creating the South Bronx, economic impact on the community, folks struggling, and out of this comes this incredible source of music that we love today. And part of it is taking something that is cherished by America, that Annie, you know, that in your high school plays, all this stuff, and taking this song and flipping it in a way that became an anthem for folks. To me, that is, there's a lot of the Jay-Z songs that I like. I could put, listen, I really thought, you know, where I would want to put that. I mean, there are other songs that you probably could put on for Jay-Z, but in terms of the impact of the song, in terms of taking something that is cherished in the larger society and then bringing in the hip hop and rebranding and making it on, was to me, is what makes hip-hop hip-hop. And so this was a struggle for me because there's some other songs I got on the outside that I could easily put in, but I felt like I needed songs like that that I felt made that kind of shift.
Yeah, that's an interesting approach because I took a similar approach where I tried to, you know, I tried to pick songs that created a narrative encapsulated that particular time and place where hip hop was during that particular era. And then they also were jams, you know, and people dug them, people got into them, people know the words, you throw it on at a party, and the place goes nuts. And there's some joints that are timeless, you know, Today Was a Good Day, Ice Cube. That's a joint that you throw it on across generations, folks are going to get down to it, they're going to jam to it. It's quotable, you know. Every time you hear the chorus, some cat songs, you know, last week I messed around, I got a triple-double. Everybody dropped that. You know?
Everybody dropped it. So that one was, I mean, I understand why you would ask that question about it, particularly with Jay-Z. There were some other songs. I mean, there are even songs on some of his recent albums that you could say from a just critical would be songs that you might put on. But what I liked about this song is what it did to people's understanding. I like songs that expand people's notion of what hip-hop can be. And nothing can expand what hip-hop can be when you take something that is an American darling like Annie and you flip it into a hip-hop beat. Nothing's greater than that.
Absolutely. Absolutely. I agree. That's the essence of it. Now, you know, Run DMC, I want you to speak on that because I missed Run DMC in their heyday. You know, that was just too far back for me. You know, I was born in 80, child of the 80s, but I was too young to really catch Run DMC. So I want you to encapsulate that particular joint about Run DMC and why you chose that particular joint.
You know, Run DMC was the first hip hop concert I ever had a chance to. Nobody, no stage performers. What Run DMC, and I think some young rappers today can learn this from Run DMC. Run DMC understood about their presence as artists is that what they did live was important as what they did on wax. Nothing was better than a Run DMC show. It's like that. I like, you know, unemployment is at a record high. People come, people go. I mean, when I used to DJ, we say it's like you play the hook, everybody would be yelling in the house. See, because that's what we did in the house. We didn't do it in the club. We did it in the house. And when you played that song, everybody was out there on the floor. In the delivery, the way in which DMC and Run delivered their lyrics with a punch is something that transcends. That's why they can come on stage. That's why Run can get on stage right now with young cats and still kill it. You mean, those cats understood the art of performance as well as the art of making a record. And this one, there was a couple Run DMC songs that I thought you could make an argument for something like, and it's not on my list, but it might be another, Walk This Way, in terms of its significance in hip-hop, are in a lot of people's top 20 songs because it was the moment in which hip-hop at that time made a connection to the most dominant genre of music at that time, and that was rock and roll, right? But, and a lot of people would have that on the list, but It's Like That was really the song, or you could say My Adidas, but It's Like That for me was the song. It was the song that we actually performed. I remember performing it in college at a talent show. And I was jamming, and my two boys was running. And they probably listening right now. And we tore it down, and we still talk about that today. But that's the song we performed. And I was jamming, Jay.
All right, we got PhD jumping back in. We got about. We're in that last half hour, so we're going to have to hit these back-to-back. And I know that's real. The listeners, y'all just got to keep up with us. But I want to hit these back-to-back because I want to get it in and have a real good conversation around these songs. So I'm going to have PhD jump in with his. Why don't you go ahead? Give me 20 through 16, PhD.
Absolutely. Before I do that, can I get a refresher on what Devon 16 through 20 was?
Yeah, go ahead, D. Wills. Lay it down.
It was a good day. Ice Cube at 20. Hard Knock Life, Ghetto's Anthem, Jay-Z, It's Like That, Run-DMC, Planet Rock, Afrika Bambaataa and the Soul Sonic Force, and Cream, Wu-Tang, Cash Rules, Everything Around Me, the Money, Dollar Dollar Bill, y'all.
Very solid, D-Wills, yeah. Very solid. Now, I'm going to come with some questionable stuff to the Game Changer. I already know. I'm going to push some of his buttons, okay?
Don't come in with no Sir Mix-a-Lot. Don't come with no Sir Mix-a-Lot. Doc almost got hit with that. He almost got hit with. He almost got hit hard with that hammer. That hammer. I love. Hammer got some significance. I think people hate on Hammer too much. But
yeah. We gave
some
praise.
You gonna come with some Pop Goes the Weasel? You gonna come with some Pop Goes the Weasel? Okay, go ahead.
Third base.
Yeah, we gave Doc Mays a pass. Next time, it's kind of like family. The next time we're gonna come at him, if he comes with Hammer again.
And he had JJ Fad. All the people we said, if he come with JJ Fad and Hammer, we're gonna have to talk about it. So we did let Doc off the hook on that one.
Yeah, it's all love, Doc. If you're still out there listening, so my 16 through 20. At 20, I'm coming with Lil Wayne. Okay? I'm coming with, I was torn between a Milli on the Carter 3 and 6 foot, 7 foot on the Carter 4. I'm going to go with 6 foot, 7 foot. A couple of bars here. My mind's so sharp, I messed around and cut my head off. Okay? Another one. Real G's move in silence like lasagna. Now, that's a bad boy. That's a bad boy. Those are some bad lines right there, okay? All right, Game Changer.
I'm going to let you finish. I'm going to let you finish, and then we're going to talk about that one.
All right, at 19, I've got Method Man featuring Mary J. Blige, All I Need. The reason I put this in my top 20, because this was one of the first rap R&B collaborations, one of the first few. Now, there were a few before that, but, you had your hardcore gangster rapper with Method Man coming from the Wu with Mary J. I mean, if you think about the next 5 to 10 years after that, you had your Mariah Carey, and she did a song with every other rapper. This laid the groundwork for all these kind of songs that had collaborations between singers and rappers. The next one is Ice Cream with Raekwon, Method Man, Capadonna, and Ghostface. At 17, another very debatable one, and I'll admit there's some nostalgia here around this time at Wood Hall at Beloit College. I'm going with 4-3-2-1. 4-3-2-1 by LL, DMX, Redman, Method Man, Cannabis. And they even had Master P in the remix. Okay. I love this song. Yeah, I love this song minus the Master P remix, because this kind of brought back to what happened in early hip hop, where you had just a bunch of cats collaborating. Okay, you had big name guys like LL, DMX was real hot back then. Redman and Method Man were at their height. Master P was actually just coming down from the song a couple of years ago. He was hot, kind of like T-Pain right now. So that was like a mega, mega thing. If you think about the next song, Swagger Like Us by T.I., Jay-Z, Kanye West, Lil Wayne, and that one lady who was on the Grammys with when she was like 9.5 months pregnant, whoever signed the hook. That song, I believe, that song, Swagger Like Us, I think was birthed from songs like 4-3-2-1, where it was like, it's cool to be on an album with somebody bigger than you or as big with you and share that shine. So, again, my 16 through 20, 20 Lil Wayne, a Milli, or 6 foot, 7 foot, 19, Method Man featuring Mary J. Blige, All I Need, 18, Ice Cream by a bunch of cats and Wu, 17, 4-3-2-1, LL, DMX, Redman, Meth, Cannabis. And 16, Swagger Like Us.
Okay. Hey, you know, I like your list. I would have gone with a Millie over 6'7" if I was actually. I probably would have gone with Go DJ if I had to pick. Wayne's biggest, most impactful song, in my opinion, would have been Go DJ. A Millie was huge, yeah. But I think Go DJ came in at that point where Wayne's lyrics were as sharp as they ever were, and that was a hit. If you ever throw on Go DJ at a school dance or a party, kids will go nuts. I mean, bonkers. Try it. Try it.
Right.
Now, my only critique of 6'7" is I don't even think Wayne had the best verse on his song. And I'll give you a quick stanza to just kind of back up my point. All right? When you got a kid, Corey Guns came with it on his song, and I thought he got Wayne, is my opinion. When a kid comes into your song rapping double time at that over the acapella part of the beat, and he comes in and he says, word to my mama, I'm out of my llama bean, don't want to see what that drama mean, get some drama mean, llama screen, hotter than summer sun on a Ghana queen. Now all I want is hits, Wayne signed a fiend? Come on.
It's when a game changer is at his best.
That's pure murder right there. Just those first four bars is pure murder right there. So I felt Corey went harder than Wayne on that, but that's my personal opinion. This is your list. Now we'll get to my list. Oh, man. No, I like where you went with that, and I like how you included the element of the posse cut, because that's something that you see every now and then from time to time. But there was a time during from about 92 to about 96, 97 where cats was all over each other's albums. Cats was collaborating with each other all the time. Where you had Doc Mays brought up Notorious Thugs. With Bone and Biggie Smalls, where you had Bone Thugs and Harmony were huge, Biggie was huge, and they got on a song together. You know, Tupac did collaborations with Scarface and Snoop and so there were a lot of when Snoop and Pac got together on America's Most Wanted, those types of collaborations where if you didn't have other cats on your album. People really wasn't looking for it like that. Like, sometimes people was looking to see who was on your album more than you.
Yeah.
Back in that era.
That's right.
So I'm glad that you included that kind of piece and kind of encapsulated that kind of artistic moment in hip-hop history. I appreciate that. So I don't have a 6'7", I can understand it. I can understand it. It's not a horrible song.
So you telling me,
I can understand it.
So you telling me that the sword is staying... The white pit bull in the corner with the red nose that you call cocaine, he's staying.
He's chilling.
Okay.
He's chilling. Now, as we get deep into the list, people slip up. We may have to get into it a little bit. But cocaine cool right now. He's chilling. So, now y'all may jump down my throat for my number 20. But again,
come on with it.
I believe, and I'll break down kind of my thought process with my list. As you get higher in my list, and my list is decorated with songs that I felt like, again, they encapsulated a moment in a particular era of hip hop. One, there has to be a high level lyrical performance, in my opinion. The beat's got to be nice. It has to be a jam, which means you throw it on and people get into it because that's what hip hop is all about. It's all about enjoying yourself, having a good time, listening to music, enjoying the musical moment that exists within that particular song. So I tried to, pick elements or songs that encompass those elements. So my number 20 is Jay-Z and Kanye, Negroes in Paris. And I put this at 20 because of the pure energy that exists in this song. The unbelievable, if you've ever been out on a night on the town
at a local watering hole establishment that plays hip hop music, and this song has come on. I haven't seen this much energy since Lil Jon was in his heyday, as far as people just really not having so much, pulling so much energy out of a song that they really don't know what to do, to the point they didn't want to throw things. They want to throw money in there. They want to throw drinks on each other. I mean, just that level of energy. But the difference, the thing that separates this from what Lil Jon was doing in his era is that there's a lot of lyrics. It's Jay and Kanye, and there's a lot of clever, not the deepest lyrics in the world by any means, but there's a lot of clever wordplay, a lot of fun things going on in the song lyrically. And it's soaked in swag, as the youngsters will say. And it's just a really fun song, to the point where these cats are performing this song 7-8 times at their concerts. And people are not responding negatively to that. I mean, how many rap songs do you know in history can be played multiple times, the same song performed all the way through multiple times at a concert, and not have people demand their money back? There are very few. And so that's why I put this song in my top 20. You know, and if not for that, simply for the line, I'm shocked too. I'm supposed to be locked up too. If you escape what I escape, you be in Paris getting messed up too. That right there encapsulates Jay-Z at this point in his life. You know what I mean? And that's looking back and reflecting like, look, man, I'm supposed to be locked up. If you got away from where I got away, man, you go someplace real nice and real bougie and kick it too. And I can appreciate that sentiment, man. I can appreciate that sentiment and just enjoying that moment. My number 19 is Nas, One Mic. Now, I debated on this because, you know, I know Illmatic is Nas's best album. But for me, this is Nas's best song, period. I remember the first time I heard this song, I literally played it like 3 times consecutively. And every time I played it, I got goosebumps. I mean, I got goosebumps. When you with the change in tempo, where it goes from slow beat to fast beat, calm energy to hard energy, it made the song, man. It made the song. You know, when you're talking about lines like write names on my hollow tips, plotting, mad violence, who I'm gonna body, this is hood politics. Things like that, man, acknowledge it, leave bodies chopped up in garbages. Those kind of lines, those signify about that Queensbridge, that Nas flavor, that Nas flow, and then just the way the beat changes and the mood it creates. This is the kind of music I would listen to before I hooped. You know, this was on my mixtape before I played games, because this got me charged. It got me in that mode where you wanted to be that quiet storm. You wanted to be calm and collected, but there was that fury going on underneath. That was what One Mic was for me, so that's why I picked that song. Keeping it in Queensbridge, I had to go with my number 18, Shook Ones, Mobb Deep. Shook Ones Part 2. Yeah. I ain't even heard Shook Ones Part 1. But after you hear Part 2, you really don't need to hear any more. You know what I mean? The first lines of the first two bars of the song, got you. I got you stuck off the realness. We be the infamous. You heard of us. Official Queensbridge murderers. All right? That opening sequence right there says it all, with that sick beat, that haunting, ominous beat. Shook Ones was another one that was always on my mixtapes, because that just got you in the mood to shank somebody. You know, every now and then you need to go to that place in your mind. You know, so Shook Ones was that for me. Number 17, anybody that knows me, knows that my favorite hip hop group of all time is Outkast. So I had to have an Outkast song in my top 20. The song I chose from Outkast was Elevators. You know, me and you, your mama and your cousin too. Rolling down the strip on O's. We coming up,
that's right.
Cadillac though. You know, that joint right there, again, that kind of slow, southern,
bounce and that ride and that motion to it. You know, it's like pouring molasses over your record. You know what I mean? Or some molasses on wax. And that's what that song felt like for me. It was a great song, a great feel, great vibe to it. And it was really just very introspective and contemplative and just reflecting on the journey that they had taken coming up like Elevators, you know. So I felt like, you know, that really captured that 96. 96 was one of the best years in hip-hop. You know, when you talk about that golden age from 88 to about 96, 96 was that year where all the player haters could bite me, as they said on the song. and that's how I felt in 96, and that was my anthem. And then number 16, representing for 8 Mile, I got Eminem coming in with Stan. I had to include this song, one, for the commercial impact of it, because it was truly one of the biggest songs of this era, you know, sampling Dido and taking the words from her song and incorporating with the story that he was telling. This is one of the beauties of hip hop is that you can tell stories. And this is one of those songs where you can really get into the storytelling aspect of hip hop. Slim paints an amazing picture of a fan who is too obsessed. And it was around that time when you had the Columbine incident, where you had, you know, a lot of things where it was like, you know, people are living and people were really debating about the impact of art on young people. And this song really captured that conversation and kind of brought that conversation even more so to the forefront, where you have, you know, one of the people that everybody's pointing a finger at writing a song about a fan of his who takes his influence on this person too far, you know, and kind of flipped it on his head and said, you know what, everybody's saying that I'm responsible for these kids doing this, that, and the other. Listening to my music has caused these kids to do this, that, and the other. I'm going to write a song about it and show you how asinine that sounds. and that's what I got from Stan, where it's like, you know, this dude is cut. When you hear the song and you listen to the lyrics, the kid Stan sounds crazy. And it also created and that's one thing about great hip-hop songs is from them you get cultural lingo. And Stan is now a cultural lingo for an obsessed fan. You know, we got LeBron stans, we got Kobe stans. You know, when you talk about somebody, when you call somebody a stan, people know what you mean. They take it a little bit too far, right? They too deep into whatever it is they're a fan of. You call them a stan, they know what that means. And so when you have something that sticks 10 years later where people still use the lingo or a phrase in a song, that's a good hip-hop song. So, you know, to recap, Negroes in Paris, number 20. Number 9, One Mic by Nas. 18, Shook Ones by Mobb Deep. 17, Elevators by Outkast. And number 16, we got Stan by Eminem.
And what I would say, I went in and out on Stan for all the reasons that you talked about. The Negroes in Paris, the reason why I didn't have it on my list and the reason why I didn't, it was almost like, you know, it's kind of like when you pick all-star games and, like, you know, it's like you want to see if it has staying power, right? And I, for all the reasons you said, it was good, but I felt like I was too close to the origin of it for me to kind of put it in historical context. That was the only reason why I would say, even if I made this list maybe next year or a year after, it would probably be on my list. But I felt like I listen to it all the time for the same reason you talk about it, but it was I felt like I needed to get away from it a little bit more to put it in context. That was the only reason why I didn't.
I can understand that. I'm all about letting things marinate and seeing where they are, how you feel about them, a year or two later. This is one that I think, again, I wouldn't put it in my top 20 if I didn't think it had that staying power. I feel like it just, when you watch how people react to it, when it comes on, it's one of those songs. And it's kind of like when you watch LeBron play his first game and you were like, the kid's got it. That's how I feel about that song. Mm-hmm. Like, the song's got it. It's got the staying power. It's going to be one of those songs where, you know, I like thinking about, you know, songs like One Mic, where I remember the first time I listened to that song when, you know, I put the CD in, listened to the CD, and it got to that song, and I kind of just stopped what I was doing. You know, it was kind of a surprise. Like, oh. And you just kind of stop and you listen to it and you see where it's going. Negroes in Paris was like that the first time I listened all the way through. You know, you're on a treadmill, you're in the weight room, and, you know, I popped there and watched The Throne. And got through the first couple songs, got to song number 3, and, you know, came in. Okay, I'm like, yeah, I'm getting into this. You know, start bouncing, start moving in the gym. Before I know it, I'm trying to lift about 300, 400 pounds. Knowing dang well I can't do that. You know what I'm saying? By the time they got to the second chorus, man, I'm trying to squat about 750 while dancing. You know what I'm saying? I'm getting hyped. I'm like, man, let me go ahead and put another plate on here. Let me get another 45. Ask your old ladies for a spot. You want to spot me on this? I got this, though.
That's crazy.
Oh, man. So, yeah, man, I want to real quick, before we get off the air, get into the Resistance Digital Dog of the Week. So I want to touch base on that. And for me, my Dog of the Week is one Michael D'Antoni, a.k.a. the Pringles guy. This brother saved his life, his career. He saved himself from becoming the NBA version of Mike Martz by inserting, in a similar way that Martz did, say, kind of jump-started his career by inserting an unknown at a key position. For Mike Martz, it was Kurt Warner, who had an amazing story. If I were to draw parallels, I think that would be where my parallel would go between Jeremy Lin and someone else from another sport. I think Kurt Warner would have the most similar. Again, Jeremy Lin, because of the race aspect of it, takes it to a whole nother level, being the first kind of notable Chinese American or Asian American player in the NBA. And I think that takes it to a whole nother level as far as becoming a global story, because of his heritage and his connection to one of the biggest populations, well, the biggest population on the globe, and you know, with his Taiwanese descent and that connection to China that he has, takes his story to a whole nother level. But that similar idea of coming out of quote-unquote nowhere and having that production that brings that attention to what you do, you know, imagine if Kurt Warner had the kind of production and seasons that he had playing for the Giants or the Jets, and I think that's what you get with Jeremy Lin to a certain level, you know, which, you know, again, so my Dog of the Week is Mike D'Antoni, because inserting the third string point guard worked out. It worked wonders. And rarely does that work out. As a coach, I'm telling you, when you get to your third string PG, you're in trouble. But then it happened to work out. So my Dog of the Week is Mike D'Antoni for saving his career for the moment.
Well, I'll go with my Dog of the Week. And it's a trio. Durant, Westbrook, Ibaka. 50 points, 40 points, 9 assists, and he messed around and got a triple-double. Ibaka. 15 points, 11 blocks.
I like that.
And 15 like rebounds. These guys are just amazing young players, and just an amazing performance by all three of these players, never done in history before. They share my Dog of the Week.
Lovely. I think that's extremely appropriate. PhD.
We need more dogs.
So my Resistance Dog of the Week, in honor of our featured guest, Dr. Eric T. Mays, captain of the 97 Wolverines National Championship team, I'm going to send a shout-out to his alma mater, the Wolverines, the Chrysler Arena was rocking a couple of days ago. Wolverines beat a really good, a very quality Ohio State Buckeye team. So my Dog of the Week is the emerging Wolverine basketball program. And, yeah, that's my Dog of the Week.
Lovely, lovely. So all the listeners out there, we're wrapping up the show. Before we get going, before we do our parting shots, I want to remind you all to check us out at our new website, www.realsportsguys.com. Check us out there. You can check out our bios. We're going to be putting blogs up and things like that up on the website, interesting things that are going on in the sports world, linking you to different stories and articles. You know, with this Jeremy Lin thing, there's a lot out there. I read an interesting article in The Economist, even. The Economist is up on Jeremy Lin. That's how far-reaching, you know, this cat's story is. And we'll put links to things like that up where it was talking about the impact and the kind of conundrum China is in, because Jeremy Lin kind of represents a lot of things that China doesn't necessarily agree with, which is really interesting because, you know, we assume that there's that connection because he looks Asian. And you figure all Asian people roll together. But it ain't always what it seems. So, parting shots, fellas. I'm going to throw it to PhD. You want to give your parting shot for the week?
I want winners. I want winners. For that reason, I want to see the Heat continue to do their thing. I want to see a great slam dunk contest. And I like the teams that Charles Barkley and Shaq have put together.
Okay. Okay. D. Wills, parting shot.
I just want to say we're getting bigger and better. And if you thought Dr. Mays was amazing, we got something for you next. You better check us out. This is going to be huge. We got a huge announcement coming, y'all. Real sports guys going to the next level. That's all I'm going to say. I'm out.
Yeah, we got some surprises coming. We got some tricks up the sleeve. You know, don't sweat. We got you. We're going to hold you down. My parting shot, shout out to Charles Oakley, man. If you didn't get a chance, man, you got to check out Charles Oakley on the Jim Rome show today. He kind of went in on like a lot of cats. Called KG a fake thug. Said Kendrick Perkins doesn't bring anything to the table. Who else did he go after? Said Zoe wasn't a real tough guy. Oak went after people. Called out Dwight Howard. Oakley don't care. Oak don't play. So shout out to Charles Oakley for keeping it real. All right, keeping it real with the Real Sports Guys, RSG Renegade Radio, and we're out. Section of Real Sports Guys, where real guys talk real sports, RSG Renegade Radio. Here we go. All right. And first thing, I want to kick this off real quick with a new segment we like to call Things My Wife Said. All right. We're all happily married men. We all have lovely wives who put up with our obsession with sports. And my lovely wife, Marissa, and I were having a conversation about the whole Jeremy Lin phenomenon. As I was, you know, talking about things that we were going to talk about on the show over the weekend, things that we were going to touch on, you know, from time to time. So I asked you, so what you going to talk about this week? So we talked about the Jeremy Lin situation. And if you say, yeah, you know, I read something about that. Floyd Mayweather said something about it. And my wife hates Floyd Mayweather.
I'm still debating her online about Mayweather. We've been going back and forth, me and your wife.
She can't stand Mayweather, man. Nah, yeah, so she has no love for Floyd Mayweather, anybody in his camp. And, you know, she was a little bit upset with Floyd about his comment about, you know, the only reason that Jeremy Lin is getting all this hype is because he's Asian. So, you know, there are times when you decide not to argue with your wife, even though you may disagree. And this was a time where I chose not to argue with my wife. But then she said something that I just had to laugh at. I was like, I have to tell the fellas about this. She said, you know, Floyd Mayweather worrying about Asian people, the only Asian person he needs to be worried about is Manny Pacquiao.
I know.
And that's where
that money
things
down.
My wife said was born. So every week, we're going to do a segment where one of us, we can talk about something our wife said during the week.
Oh, my goodness.
When she said that, I almost spit out my orange juice, man. Oh, man. You know, she had that tone with it. Just really snapped it off. You know, just real matter-of-fact-like. With a certain level of disgust and appallness at the fact that, you know, Floyd Mayweather is even worried about anybody else other than Manny Pacquiao right now. I thought that was hilarious. I needed to share that with the fellas. But, you know, continuing our NBA conversation, you know, the All-Star game is coming up this weekend. You know, the starting fives were announced a couple weeks ago. And I asked you guys to come up with your own quote unquote, your real sports guys starting five all stars. I want to toss this to PhD first. Who do you got in your starting five in both conferences? Give me East and West.
So this was interesting coming up with this. In the East, I struggled to find that fifth guy that I felt like really is having an all star type of year. And then in the West, there were five or six. Well, there were like two or three extra guys, so I had seven, and it was tough trying to pare it down to five. So in the East, to me, no-brainers are LeBron, Derrick Rose, Dwight Howard. Dwight Howard is averaging 20 and 15. Do you guys know that? Have you guys noticed that?
Yeah,
I noticed it. Yep.
I mean, my face is just wrinkled up right now. That's like the Moses Malone type of numbers, you know, just make you nervous. So I've got LeBron, Derrick Rose, Dwight Howard. The fourth guy I've got is Darren Williams, and maybe I'm having some recency effect. His performance earlier this week,
mm-hmm.
he put up near 40, was pretty impressive. But if you look at his numbers, he's putting up 22-8 on a pretty bad team, and that's putting it pretty mildly. The fifth guy, I really struggled to find a fifth guy that I thought deserved to be in this first five, and I went off the box a little bit. Big surprise for me here. I went with Josh Smith, a guy who was actually a snub. Josh Smith with the Hawks. He's averaging 16 points, 10 blocks. I'm sorry, 16 points, 10 rebounds, and 2 blocks a game. Those are pretty strong numbers for me, considering he's playing on a team that has tons and tons of gunners. In the West, for me it was pretty simple. There were six or seven guys I thought that deserved to be in this list, but I cut it to CP3, Kobe, Durant, Kevin Love, Blake, and the guy on the outside looking in on my list was Bynum, but I think he was really, really deserving as well.
Okay. D. Wills, what's your list looking like?
In my list in the East, I would say that it's probably chalk in the East, meaning I got LeBron, Derrick Rose, Dwight Howard. Even though some injuries, these other two, I still think they would be my starting five, even though the injuries is Dwayne Wade and Carmelo. And so that's why I call it chalk, because I think they're probably what a lot of people might put down there. And so I didn't have any surprises. In the West, I had Kobe, Chris Paul, Kevin Love, Andrew Bynum, and Kevin Durant. Because it was regardless of starting position, but that would be my five, which is probably going to be the five in the West.
Okay.
I can't argue with that. I can't argue with that. In the East, I had a similar list of PhDs. I had Bron, D. Rose, Dwight Howard, Darren Williams, and my kind of off-the-board pick, I went with Danny Granger instead of Carmelo. The Pacers are 20-12, 625 win percentage, one of surprises in the East. And he's the best player on that team. And I think you have to give love to guys who are winning. You know, I would throw D-Wade in there, but he's injured. He was injured. And, you know, I try not to, if you haven't played enough to be, you know, listed amongst, you know, the top, you know, scorers or the top, you know, rebounders or whatever, you haven't had, you know, enough game time to have your numbers count towards, you know, a scoring title or a rebounding title, then I don't count you. So I had to exempt D-Wade because of that. And I replaced him with Darren Williams. And then throwing in Granger. In the West, Kobe, Kevin Love, Chris Paul, Durant, and Blake. Again, Bynum will be on the outside looking in for me, as well as LaMarcus Aldridge, who I thought also might, you know, warrant a starting spot. With that particular group, he's having an excellent year and carrying that franchise right now out in Portland. Who again got some dismal news this week with Greg Oden going in for his 75th microfracture surgery.
Poor guy.
Yeah, man, it sucks. You know, it sucks when you don't get to see what could have been a great talent. Fulfill their promise. That always bothers me. You know, guys like Bo Jackson, you know, Terrell Davis, guys who get hurt before they really get to max out their career potential. And Greg Oden, his career really never got off the ground, which is unfortunate because he seemed like a level-headed kid who would have handled it pretty well, all the success and been a good star for the NBA to have. So it's unfortunate that it didn't work out.
And this is a kid who wanted to be a dentist, could be a dentist because of size. I mean, this is a guy that just wanted to contribute and be good. So, it's something that, you know, he's saying he's going to come back, but, you know, it's a wrap from my standpoint.
Yeah, it's going to be a tough road back. I mean, he can come back and he may be able to play some basketball, but he's not going to be what he could have been. You know, the same thing when you look at a guy like Sean Livingston, who's been able to carve out a bit of a career for himself after, you know, his knee went in like seven different directions. He's still been able to make something out of himself and have a career. But ultimately, you know, it's a hard knock life. And Greg Oden's living it. And I'm sure it's eating him up because he wanted to be great. And that's the other thing that kind of sucks is when you have guys who actually want it and who want to be great and who want that pressure and want that, you know, you feel like you're missing out as a sports fan. So that's why I always rooted for Greg Oden, you know, hoping he can come back and get it because I wanted to see where he could take his career. But don't look like that's going to happen.
You're a big supporter of Oden, too. And, you know, I admire that. You stuck with this guy through thick and thin. You kept hoping him. You know, you had a realistic view of what he could become. So you know, I'm hurting for you too, Game Changer, because I know you're rooting for him.
Don't hurt for me too much, man. I'm good. I just hate to see a guy who seemed like he wanted to be great and had the potential to be great not get an opportunity to do that because of health and injuries. You know, another guy who may fall into that category soon is Adrian Peterson. You know, that's a guy that, you know, given what happened to his knee this year, who knows if we're going to see the same all day that we saw before. And that sucks because he still had about 4 or 5 good years left of running hard, and now that may be cut short a bit. So that always bugs me. Like I said, that always bugs me. Moving on. Number two and a five on the
cannot play with him. Cannot win with him. Cannot coach with him. Can't do it. I want winners.
I love that. I love that at the end. Can't do it. Iron Mike, man. Iron Mike. Mike Singletary. That's the dude right there, man. You know, representing Baylor. Representing Snubs. Who was Snubs? Who did you think should have made the All-Star team that didn't make the All-Star team? D. Wills, who are your snubs? Now, again, if you're going to pick a snub, you got to take somebody off. So you got to go one for one. All right? So if you're going to give me a snub, you got to give me somebody taking off the team.
I was going in the direction of Josh Smith, but I'm going to leave that for Phil T. This is, you'll be surprised on the snub on this one. I think Paul Gasol is a sub. He's third, only to Kevin Love and Dwight Howard in double-doubles this year. I think all of this talk about trade and everything else has probably even clouded some of his performances. But in the face of that, still to be third in double-doubles to only Kevin Love and Dwight Howard, you know, helping to hold that team above water. You know, I would say that I think that that he is a he's a snub. And who I would take off, I might take Nash off the squad. And the only reason I would say I take Nash off because I think Tony Parker has had a resurgence here late and has been putting the season together. San Antonio's put some runs together. Russell Westbrook has had an incredible season. I think Marc Gasol, his brother, is deserving of being on there. You could make an argument about taking him out, but they've been grinding after having that injury there in terms of them and trying to adjust there. So I'm saying Paul Gasol. I think that you know he's put some work in, but I think all this other talk about trade is been kind of a cloud or overshadow that.
Okay, PhD, what say you?
So I think this is a down year for the East in terms of
Agreed. Guys
who should be clear-cut all-stars. You know, I take it back to 2001, you know, where you're playing your NBA Live, your 2K, whatever. You got Anthony Mason on an all-star team. You got Theo Ratliff.
Jamal McGlure.
Yeah, you know, you got Antonio Davis from the Raptors, not when he was with the Pacers, when he played with the Raptors. You know, I mean, you just got a really weak group of guys, okay? You know, on the video games, you almost feel like you're better off playing with a regular team than playing with a team than one of these all-stars.
Okay.
So, again, I'm taking it back to 2001 saying, ugh, it's kind of tough here. So, as D. Wells mentioned, my guy is Josh Smith. I think that any other year I wouldn't be pushing for him to be on the All-Star team. But I just stated my case why I am pushing right now. And who I'd be cutting would be Carmelo or Joe Johnson. Carmelo, because he's been somewhat inconsistent. His shooting percentages are extremely low, career low, and we can reason why that is, but they're low. And Joe Johnson, just because he's getting overpaid, and I don't really like his game. I really don't have no rational.
I told you when they got him, he was stealing. I knew him from stealing. He's stealing.
Oh,
yeah.
Man.
I
got one for you, Phil T. Here you go.
I don't have facts to back this up.
That's right. Romy, I'm going to give you some statistical analysis. In this situation, I just don't feel right. I don't like this game, period.
Right. Just don't feel right. Don't feel good leaving my hand.
That's right.
Hey. You know, I'm with you on your assessment of the East. I think that's extremely accurate, man. You know, there are quite a few guys on the roster who I just it was like they had to put somebody in. You know, when you're looking at Roy Hibbert, who I don't even think is the best player on his team, but they needed another center. Iguodala's having a decent year, but again, I don't even know if he's having the best year of anybody on his own team. But somebody from the Sixers had to get put in. Somebody had from the Pacers had to get put in because they're winning. Joe Johnson of the Hawks, again, I'm in that boat with you. Just don't feel right. There are about three or four guys on the East roster who I could do without. But honestly, I couldn't find nobody else to plug them in to replace them with. So
yeah.
I'm just going to kind of leave them there.
Right. You
know, I might swap out Granger for Joe Johnson. Let Carmelo keep his move Carmelo down to a reserve and let Granger start. But and maybe I put Chandler in for Roy Hibbert. But it is what it is, man. I mean, you could basically got a 10-10 center starting, or 10-10 center on an All Star team, no matter what, and that just don't feel right. You know, as your second best All Star in the conference is. Second best all-star center in the conference is kind of, again, as we said before, what does it mean to be the best center in the NBA today anyway? We're talking about Dwight Howard. What does that really mean? In the West, a guy that, you know, I think may have deserved some all-star consideration that, you know, was on the outside looking in, was a kid like James Harden, who I think you know, he's really taking his game to another level. If I had to take somebody out, you know, I might pull Dirk. You know, I might pull Dirk for missing all the damn games because he was out of condition. Like the season, like he didn't know that he was going to have to play this year. So that might be the guy that I might pull would be Dirk Nowitzki. I might yank him out of the starting because he missed quite a few games for really no reason. And again, for me, I'm all about you got to be playing to be on the team, and you got to have played a considerable amount. That would bug me, so I would probably yank Dirk out of the lineup. And I feel like they got enough bigs to begin with anyway. Between Love, Gasol, Aldridge, Bynum, and Griffin, you know they could use another backcourt player. So I would have put Harden in instead of Dirk. So that's the one change I would have made. Now, All-Star Weekend is always a big deal. You know, there's always events going on. You got the rookie sophomore game with the new format that I really like, mixing them up and having Shaq and Chuck do the draft. We can get into those teams in a second. The dunk contest, it's always hit and miss depending upon who's in it. Maybe there'll be some surprise stars that jump up off the screen on Saturday night, but you know I wouldn't hold my breath with the crop of guys they got in the dunk contest this year. But you never know; guys can amaze you with their athleticism. We'll see though. The 3-point shootout, I think it's a good crop of shooters that are going to be involved in the 3-point shootout this year. You got James Jones, Ryan Anderson, Mario Chalmers, Joe Johnson, your boy. Joe Johnson, you know that's PhD, that's going to be your boy from now on. Hey, anytime we refer to Joe Johnson, he's going to be, hey, that's your boy.
Yeah.
And Kevin Love. And then we got the one thing that I'm looking to DVR is the skills challenge. The skills challenge, because you got some guys who I want to see who can do what out of this group. This is a pretty star-studded group of young and in their prime point guards when you're looking at the Taco Bell skills challenge, where you got Steph Curry, Russell Westbrook, John Wall, Darren Williams, Kyrie Irving, and Tony Parker. I think these point guards take this event serious. What's going to up the ante is when you get a big man. I would like to see LeBron do the skills challenge. You know, I think that would be, you know, for him to go in and snub his nose at some of these small guys and say, hey, I can do this too, even though I'm 6'8", 260. You know, I think that would be a challenge. That'd be kind of like Jordan jumping in a 3-point contest just so he could win something. So that's what I'm looking forward to. What are you guys looking forward to? What are you going to DVR? What are you going to check out this weekend?
I always find myself doing the Saturday night, all of them, but for the first time, I'm kind of interested in this Rising Stars challenge with the mixing of the teams. You know, obviously you had the Chuck and Shaq feature into it. Seeing how these cats might go head to head at each other. I'm interested in that, and also the slam dunk contest. I'm putting a little money on Buddy Chase. If you don't know about him, that boy can leap. And it'd be interesting to see what he might pull out of his hat on the slam dunk contest.
So you're taking Buddinger. Let's go ahead and take a bet, man. Let's go ahead and take some bets. Come on. This is RSG, real guy. We're gonna put some bets down. Let's put some money on it. You taking Buddinger?
Yeah.
Who you taking, PhD?
I have to pick somebody, right?
Yeah, you gotta pick somebody.
Okay. Eeny, meeny, miny, mo.
I'll go. I'm taking
my
chopper.
Uninterested I am. I'm just not very interested in the whole All Star Saturday. Yeah, I'm just not real fired up about it. You know, D. Brown pumping up his Reebok pumps. You know, the next Michael Jordan, a.k.a. Harold Miner, Baby Jordan. We got Air Canada. And now we got Chase Buddinger.
You're not feeling Chase Buddinger.
I'm not. What are my other three options?
You got two now. You got either Paul George or Derek Williams. I'm taking Shumpert.
All right, I'll go with Derek Williams.
Okay.
Just because.
I'm taking Shumpert. Shump had the highest vertical at the combine, so I'm hoping he can get up.
Wow.
Yeah, I know that because I'm a nerd.
Yeah. Chase plays volleyball. He's about to spike it down in the rim.
So D. Wills, you kind of talked about the All-Star Challenge, man. There's some interesting matchups in it. What do you think of the configuration of these two teams? Shaq's roster consists of Blake Griffin, Jeremy Lin, Ricky Rubio, Greg Monroe, Markieff Morris, Kemba Walker, Landry Fields, Norris Cole, Brandon Knight, and Tristan Thompson. Chuck's roster is Kyrie Irving, DeMarcus Cousins, Paul George, Derek Wilson, Marshawn Lynch, John Wall, Gordon Hayward, Tiago Splitter, Cowie Leonard, and Evan Turner. Just off of that quick rundown, who's winning?
I'm still trying to figure it all out, but I'm thinking that I like Rubio and Lynn, man. I like All-Star games tend to be guard games, and if you look at Shaq's team, he got Rubio and Lynn. That group, I think they might run with some things. I like Kyrie though. He got
and wasn't Chuck
Wong,
trying to
squad.
Be a GM,
yeah.
Man? Wasn't Chuck trying to be a GM?
Yeah,
a horrible roster. This is a horribly configured roster. He got 10 distributors.
Yeah.
He got Ricky Rubio distributors and a bunch of shooters.
Ricky Rubio and Brandon Knight. Ricky Rubio's made for All-Star games like these.
Oh yeah.
He gonna show out with Blake. Oh man, yeah, I'm going with Shaq.
Yeah, I like Shaq's roster. Shaq's got all the sizzle. Shaq's got all the sizzle on his roster with Blake, Lynn, and Rubio. He got three of the hottest names in the league right now.
Yeah.
So yeah, I go with Shaq's roster.
Yeah.
So moving on to number four real quick. You know, we get into the second half of the season with the All-Star break. Give me two teams who you think are ready to make a run and kind of really hit their stride the second half.
So I like Memphis. I think Memphis is a team that they're going to get better the more they play together. And although the core of their team has been with Memphis for the last couple of years, it seems like they've had a challenge all being healthy at the same time.
Mm-hmm.
The last year, you know, when Gasol and Randolph were playing very well together, Rudy Gay, who got off to a career start the first 20 games of the season, he missed the majority of the season, the last three or four months of the season. And so this year, they've been waiting to get Zach Randolph. And, yes, I did pick up Randolph and Lopez in my fantasy league, and all of a sudden, I'm a beast. Okay, I know you guys know this. Okay.
I'm not mad at you, man. It was a smart move, smart move.
Yeah, so Randolph will be back in the next 2 weeks. And Mike Conley, quiet as his cat, he's been playing at a near all-star level. If he was in the East, he'd probably be on an all-star team this year.
He'd be starting point.
Right. So Memphis would be my first team. My second team, which might be a bit surprising, is the Celtics. I think Doc is just trying to get through the season. And he's fine if they end up in the 5 or 6 seed. You know, I think he feels like that's a better trade-off than trying to push these guys to be a 3 seed. That's probably realistically the highest they could get, but having them be broke down by the time the playoffs come. So I really think they're going to be a dangerous team come playoff time. So I'll go with the Memphis and Boston Celtics.
Okay. I'm going to throw my hat in the ring real quick and throw mine out there. You know, I like your Memphis pick. That's definitely one of the teams that was on my radar. You know, they've really pushed it. They're sitting at the 17. They're 4 games over 500 and probably their best player and one of the top 3 to 4 power forwards in the league is not playing right now in Zach Randolph. So when they get him back, I expect them to really take a jump. Another team that I expect to kind of really take a jump and make a major push is Denver. Denver has some injuries right now. Nene is out. You talk about pickups. I snatched up Wilson Chandler in the fantasy league. Wilson Chandler is getting exiled from China. He's getting to come back home. Rudy Fernandez is injured right now. Gallinari is injured right now. They have a lot of guys who can play on that roster, and they have a very deep team. And they're a very good team. So I expect that when they get back and get everybody back and get all in sync again, they're going to be a team that nobody wants to play in the playoffs. In the East, a team that I think is going to make a run here in the second half of the season and try and sneak into an 8th playoff spot, and this is pending a trade. I'm going with the New Jersey Nets. Pending that they can pry Dwight Howard away from Orlando. If that happens, that's a team that I think is going to make a big push. Other than that, I think the East playoffs is set. If Dwight don't get traded, the East playoffs is what it is. I don't see nothing below Boston making a run and getting into the playoffs. When you're looking at Cleveland, Milwaukee, Detroit, the Nets, Toronto, Washington, and Charlotte, it just gets nasty and ugly down there. Ain't nothing new happening down there. So that's who I'm looking at. D. Wills.
Two teams I'm looking at in the West that I think, and part of it was what I talked about in the preseason. One is Minnesota. I think what's good about Adelman, he's a great coach. I think he's been working his first half of the season to really try and find a rotation and get guys to learn to play together. But he's a great teacher. I think they're going to make a run down the stretch. I'm not sure if they'll catch that final spot, but I think they'll make a run. And the other team that's sitting in at 17 and 16 and just shellacking San Antonio tonight is Portland. And I think Portland is a team that has a lot of different pieces. I think they're learning to play together, trying to figure out how to get Crawford, where he's going to play, Felton, how that's going to work in terms of the point. But I think Aldridge played big down the stretch last year, and I think they might do it. In the East, game change, I agree with you. I think it's pretty much set. A team that's just interesting, I don't think they're going to catch it, but I think that they're heading in the right direction. And, you know, I got to go home 8 Mile.
Yeah, I like what how Detroit is beginning to shape up. You know, they won seven of their last 10 games. I think they got some pieces. I think Lawrence is getting them to play defense and trying to instill an identity. This is a sleeper. I think, you know, that they've been putting some games together here lately. You talked about New Jersey. They beat New Jersey twice already in this stretch run. But I think they're learning how to put their pieces together. And I wasn't high on Detroit. So, but I've been, you know, this good thing about that, I got this NBA pass. I've been catching some games, it's a sleeper. And if they don't make it, I think this is one of those years where they begin to get back online to where they need to be.
Yeah, Greg wow. Monroe looks like a legitimate ball player. He looks like somebody that they could build around. They can get something out of the kid, Brandon Knight. You know, if he continues to develop, they'll be all right.
Yeah. So, I heard was that Phil in the background?
Yeah, you surprised me. You surprised me with the Pistons. I mean, it's just been really tough to watch them play, man. So it just hurts too much.
It hurts, but I've been watching. They won. You know, they're 7-3 of their last 10 games. And part of what Lawrence is trying to do is get them to commit to playing defense. I think their biggest problem right now is Stuckey. I think there was an investment made in him in a way that I don't think he can deliver. And figuring out what to do with Gordon. I think there's some pieces there, but I think Lawrence is one of those coaches. I mean, he was even New Jersey. I mean, this is a guy that can make folks commit to defense, and he's trying to build a culture there. And I think with Greg Monroe in the middle, this is a guy that's talented, can pass as a big man. I think he brings a lot to it.
Last question for the night. Yeah, that was a crowd silencer there. Last question of the night. All right. Of course, there are going to be some big moves. All-Star break is always where GMs kind of come together and get some things done. Players are always kind of lobbying for guys to come to their town. You know, Kobe came out recently, said either trade Powell or don't trade Powell. You know, I was reading earlier today, Chris Broussard threw out some scenarios with Powell going to winding up in Minnesota. I think there was some talk about Powell winding up in Cleveland. Chicago, Gary Rose has mentioned that he'd like to play with Powell. That's one shoe that may drop. We also have Dwight Howard, who's still out there in limbo as far as where he's going to wind up playing out the rest of his career. You know, he has a short list of places to go. What are some big moves that you guys think are going to happen? And then also some small moves that you think are going to happen that might put some teams over the top.
Sure. So for me, I'll start with Minnesota. I think Minnesota has a ton of marketable, attractive talent and they're stacking a bunch of different positions. So I think in order to grow and to let some of these other players get the minutes they need, that they'll probably need to start letting go of some of these players. So whether it's J.J. Barea, if they get rid of Johnson, they give Williams more time, I think these are guys who can contribute to teams that are headed to the playoffs that may just need another piece or two. And some of those teams I'm thinking of is possibly Memphis or the 76ers, teams that are certainly on a trajectory to make the playoffs, but their inexperience may help them. So they may be looking to add either more youth for depth or a veteran to help shore up things.
Okay. D. Wills, what you thinking?
I'm going to have to actually give this credit to Dr. Damon Williams, who wants to come back on our show. He said, I haven't been on in a while. But I have to say this one because it was an interesting trade he talked about with the Lakers. I think I got to get the pieces right. But Pau Gasol for Brandon Jennings and Steven Jackson. Lakers get their guard. They get a guy like Steven Jackson, who is kind of that game, that kind of thug. You know, Kobe gets somebody who can run with it, who can get rugged with it. You know, get that.
Powell's
going to
shoot himself.
Dunk.
Man, Powell's going to walk. Man, we're going to have to put Powell on suicide watch if he gets sent up to Milwaukee. Well, you're talking about losing in the trade. You know, Powell kind of fragile.
And Lakers don't have to wonder about think about that coming back to bite them anytime soon.
Yeah. It would be nice to get Jennings back to Compton. Jennings wants to get back to Compton. I'd be a little bit worried about that though.
Say too close to the.
Yeah. I don't know if you want him back there with all being too close. You know. So.
Yeah.
So that's it for this after-hours session. We're going to wrap this up. You know, we all got lives. We got to get going. Well, we appreciate the listeners who are downloading for sticking with us. Hope you have a good evening and a good week, and we'll catch you next week. Same time, same place, RSG, Renegade Radio, Real Sports Guys. Holla.